Ready for your new TV obsession? Thursday, January 26th on the CW, the network that gave you The Vampire Diaries and Gossip Girl, is bringing you the awesomely dark and addictive new series Riverdale. Based on Archie comics, Riverdale puts a super edgy, twisted spin on the classic characters you know. Did you ever read Archie? Which character are you? Are you a good girl like Betty, or are you more of a Veronica? Are you like Golden Boy Archie, or are you a misunderstood loner like Jughead? That's where I really see myself, as a misunderstood loner like Jughead. Which character are you secretly crushing on? Now, Riverdale may look like the perfect, safe, wholesome small town, but it's got huge secrets. It all starts off with a new year at Riverdale High and the mysterious murder of one of its most popular kids. Everyone becomes a suspect, and that's when the sordid details about what everyone really did over the summer and with whom begin to surface. You won't believe what the people in this town are hiding. So do not miss the jaw-dropping series premiere of the must-see new show Riverdale, Thursday, January 26th, only on the CW. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here once again for a very special episode of Rob Has a Podcast, because I'm going to be talking with the winner of Survivor, Millennials versus Gen X, Adam Klein, in our, it's a, such a postseason tradition to go through the season with the winner. It all started back after Cagayan when Tony Vlachos came on and spoke with Steven and I about his game. And since that point, every winner has come on to talk about their whole experience with me in the offseason. So looking forward to getting into everything with Adam. Earlier this week, or this past week, I had the pleasure of speaking with David Wright, who was actually here in the studio. If you missed that interview, that's about 2 hours and 40 minutes. I had a really great chat with David. So if you are a fan of his game or want to know more about that, I highly recommend that you check that out. This week coming up, I'm going to be speaking with Brett LaBelle. So looking forward to that one as well. Also, Jordan Parhar spoke with Will Wall on the reality TV Happy Hour about 2 weeks ago. So that's available in the archives if you want to check that out. Before we get into my interview with Adam, I don't want to have to stop once we get going with Adam. So let me just take a moment and tell you about a show I'm very excited about. You guys know it's coming. Hunted is coming to CBS. We're going to be podcasting about it. Hunted is the show that asks, if you had to disappear, could you? It's a high stakes game of hide and seek. Of course, Hunted is the show that's coming into the Survivor time slot over these next couple of weeks. It's with 18 ordinary people in teams of two becoming fugitives trying to escape. They're on the run from former professional bounty hunters on the ground. How did Kyle Jason miss out on being a part of this? They're being directed by a command center run by some of the best minds in law enforcement, former FBI, CIA, SWAT, U.S. Marshals, and White House intelligence professionals tracking social media, closed-circuit TVs, ATMs, any footprint they're leaving, digital or physical, they're going to be tracked. What the people have to do is be on the run for 28 days and stay in a zone of approximately 100,000 square miles with severely limited funds. And then it's up to them to avoid being captured. If they can do it, they get 250 grand. And every team on the show has a chance to win 250,000, not just the first team that gets to the finish. There's going to be moms, married couples, best friends, ex-cons, a whole mix of people that want to match wits with the best in law enforcement. And Hunted is coming up. The premiere is going to be this Sunday, January 22nd, after the AFC Championship game on CBS. And of course, I'm going to be bringing you podcast coverage of it all as we continue our march to Survivor 34. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to welcome in finally the winner of Survivor, Millennials versus Gen X. He is a super duper Survivor fan and a super duper winner. And here he is, Adam Klein. Adam, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. How are you?
Very good. Adam, let me also say to you, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, even.
Last year on my birthday, I got the call to go to casting finals. And now today on my birthday, my podcast with Rob Cesternino is dropping. Oh, dropping. My God.
Yeah. Okay. Now you are going to be just 26, correct?
Yes.
Okay. According to Andrew Savage's favorite Survivor wiki, you are the youngest winner of Survivor by birthday as of right now. How does that feel?
I took the title from Michelle, and I would imagine that someone will take it from me very shortly.
Yeah, eventually, you would think so.
I mean, the older I get, the younger they get, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a Children of Men type thing. So you are the youngest Survivor winner on the board right now.
For now.
Yes. And congratulations again on all of that. I got to see you the night of the finale again. Such an exciting night. What have the last couple of weeks been like for you?
It's been crazy. I got so many messages, so many people have like had cancer in their lives and have gone through difficult times. And I'm really thankful that I, was able to like open something up in a lot of people and inspire some people. And then we're also raising a ton of money for lung cancer research, but I can't even like, I'm trying to like respond to everybody, but I'm just still so far behind. Like if people who sent me stuff on December 14th, I haven't even opened it most likely yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it's a lot, and I'm sure that most of the mail that you get isn't, hey, Adam, you're the best, I thought you were great, like 140 characters. I'm sure when people are writing to you about, sickness that they've either had or somebody in their family has, like a loved one, I'm sure they're writing you something very lengthy, and you probably, don't want to just half-ass a response to these
people. Exactly. Yeah, those are the ones that I want to take the most time with, and it will, It will be a while before I can sort of craft a response to each one of those. Cause it's very personal for them, just like it was very personal for me. And I certainly don't just want to like copy and paste a response.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a lot of stuff to go through. What about outside of the Survivor stuff? Have you done anything fun since you've won?
I'm definitely spending a lot of time with family. We went up to Lake Tahoe for about a week and I spent some time, up there with family. And we're just, it's a little bit tough for us because Survivor was, a real great distraction. Mm-hmm. We lost my mom 8 months ago and we've always had this Survivor thing in front of us. And so now I feel like it's just going to get a bit quieter.
Yeah.
I know that's already difficult for my family. I'm trying to still, live positively like she always did and would want me to. But it's certainly a challenge.
Well, I'm very happy that you're here today to talk through all of this stuff because I have so many questions for you as we go through everything from the season. Let me just, before we talk about millennials versus Gen X, I'd love to get a little bit more of your Survivor backstory. I think we all know about your super duper fandom and you were on Reddit. When did you first start getting involved with Survivor in terms of the community aspect of it?
And so in terms of the online community, I have been involved since I was in the sixth grade. So I was, 10 or 11 years old, something, 11 years old. And when I was 11, I think when maybe Survivor Thailand was airing,
yeah.
There was a fantasy game on Yahoo Sports and for Survivor. And so I played Fantasy Survivor on Yahoo. And then someone in there posted like, hey, I'm hosting my own Survivor game. Like, have you ever wanted to play? And I think it was called Survivor Avalanche or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I joined and I played a game of Survivor online. And I like started, and then I was like, oh, and then this is kind of fun. And I met people through like, AIM or whatever, or Yahoo Fantasy Leagues. And started playing a few more games. So that was my hobby in middle school was I would like come home from school, of course, after doing my homework, and I would play Survivor online. There was actually like a reunion Facebook group that was made, probably about a year ago or that I was added to about a year ago. And then as the show started airing, people were like, wait, is that Adam, like the little like 12-year-old kid who played the games with us? I was always the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it's a kick for them too. to see someone like the little kid that they were playing Survivor with online like 13 years ago actually getting on the show.
So how many ORGs would you say you participated in before you went to Survivor?
Well, you know, let me be very clear that I was in middle school and I stopped playing online games like, you know, after I graduated middle school. So
hey, you don't have to put them down, Adam. I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen that play them.
No. It's great. No. I'm not saying that it's not that you can't play it as an adult. I'm just saying like I didn't really have like a it's, you know, it's not like I prepared for Survivor with online games. It was something that I did many, many years ago. I probably played like 20 games, yeah. Something like that.
I'm just curious because I feel like that maybe you got your 10,000 hours of Survivor before you even went out there, and that maybe was a leg up.
It's possible. I ended up actually also like hosting my own games in real life. Of course, I had to be the host because, you know, no one else would do it. So I didn't get to play. But like I went on a backpacking trip in the seventh grade and hosted my own Survivor game where like two of the guys, when they got voted out, they like cried when they got voted out, and I made up the challenges, and it was this whole big thing. And I have some of the, I should post, I recorded when people made the votes, and it's hilarious in retrospect. And I ended up doing something similar when I was in high school or graduating high school with the show The Mole. I made my own The Mole show, and there's like a couple episodes of that on YouTube, like The Mole Lake Tahoe. So I've been very like interested in reality television for a very long time.
Okay, so you had said during the reunion show you had applied a few times. You even applied with your mom to go to be on San Juan del Sur. Was that the first time that you applied?
Yeah, so I applied for the first time in, I sent in my tape in February of 2013, and then I got a call. I had just missed like casting for basically Cagayan at that point. Then I got a call in December of 2013, and they were casting for Blood vs. Water. So while I originally applied by myself, they asked if I had any family members who would want to do it. And so, you know, I immediately lied and said, oh, yeah, like they're dying to be on Survivor. Like, this is a dream for all of us. And then I went home and I had to like beg and plead. But my brother was willing to do it and my mom was willing to do it. So then I sent in two more tapes, one with my brother and one with my mom. Like everyone did, they fell in love with my mom. They thought she was great. And we started moving through the process together. And so she had to get a physical and all that stuff. And she was totally medically, you know, cleared to participate in this kind of very strenuous physical adventure. And she was 58 years old at the time, which would have made her, I believe, like the third oldest woman in the history of the show. Mm-hmm. So she was incredibly fit. But yeah, we ended up not getting on. They said they had someone who was too similar, which I'm still not really sure who that was or if they even actually made the show. But we didn't get on, but I applied again the next year, heard absolutely nothing back, applied again one more time the year after, and that's when I ended up getting on the show.
When you said it was a year ago this time when you got the call to go on to the season.
To go on to casting finals in LA.
To go on to the casting finals. At what point did you find out about your mom's diagnosis?
So she was diagnosed in August. She actually encouraged me to apply again. So I applied again after she was diagnosed. So my first two audition tapes that I did on my own, I spent like weeks or months like crafting, and I had, you know, they were well edited. I had my friend Joel help me like edit the whole thing. And they were really well put together. And then for this one, you know, my whole life was just being consumed by this diagnosis. So, you know, I was like, I'm not even going to apply. And then my mom was like, yeah, just do it. And so I went home, and in one evening I sat in front of my computer, I hit record, and I talked for a few minutes, I cut it down, and I sent it in. So, you know, but I don't want it to seem like that's the only way to get on the show, because obviously my first tape, which was very different, also got their attention and got my foot in the door. But, you know, if you have applied a few times and you've had some success, but maybe you just haven't gotten all the way, maybe switch it up a little. Try something different that you haven't tried before.
Yeah. What do you attribute getting the call on the one you sent into? What was it that you did different that time?
So what I did was I knew that they already knew who I was because we had had a number of conversations, you know, 2 years before. And so what I did was I sent an update video. I was like, here is why I am a better candidate now than I was when you, you know, first talked to me 2 years ago. I was like, I've gotten 4 raises and 3 promotions at a nonprofit, which is saying something, you know, for if it's not like there's all that much money to be thrown around in a nonprofit. So if you can get a raise or a promotion, it's a big deal. And I was like, I'm managing people that are like twice my age, which probably helped for the theme. You know, talking about how I can work with both people that are my age and people that are significantly older. You know, so that's just one example, but I talked about the ways in which I have grown since then. I talked about like how I've been in training ever since, because I was not physically fit when I first got the call from Survivor in December of 2013. And I immediately joined like a CrossFit gym, and I didn't get on, but I kept at it and I kept working out. And ultimately, you know, I was like, one day I'm going to get on the show. So I need to be in good enough shape to actually do well. So I talked about stuff like that and showed some clips of that.
And also, you know, there's different themes that they do where you're not necessarily a great fit for white collar, blue collar, no collar. And then maybe they're saying, okay, well, brains versus beauty versus brawn, hard to pick just one.
Rob, yes.
Millennials. Ah, yeah. Got it. Okay.
I do think like for the white, like, I don't know where I would have fit on white collar, blue collar, no collar. Like for what I do, nothing really makes sense. Maybe no collar, but I'm kind of a white collar personality. I don't know. I think they were looking for a millennial also that like had that sort of nonprofit, like give back side. Cause I think that's something that defines our generation.
Yeah. So before you go out there to the game, you know, you have to make this decision to go or not. And you touched on this again at the reunion show. Could you just talk a little bit about that decision to decide to go and play the game?
Yeah. So, you know, normally there's not a decision to be made. Like if you get an opportunity to go on Survivor, you go on Survivor.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I know you say you wouldn't, but when the time's right, one day, Rob, you're gonna get back out there.
Okay.
Come on, right?
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Final two. All right.
We'll see. Oh, are we already making a deal, Rob?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. All right. So I was totally taken aback by even the offer that I could go on a future season, if that's what my family decided was the right thing to do. You know, I don't think they do that very often where they say like, if you want a spot next year, you can have it. So I was really touched by that. And the production has been just outstanding, you know, throughout this whole process, and very kind to my family.
But just to add to that, I mean, they might say that to you, but it's not a guarantee. It's, you know, you take that with a grain of salt, just like a deal in Survivor.
Sure. I mean, it felt very true and honest at the time. You know, of course, like they can screw you, I'm sure. You know, they said, like, we will save a spot for you next year if that's better for you. So whether they meant it or not, I don't know, but it sounded like they meant it. And, you know, I talked individually to each one of my family members without saying where I was leaning or whatever. I was like, what do you think is the right thing to do? And each one of them, and especially my mom, said, you have to go now. Now is the right time. And I think the reason, and I agreed, and I think the reason we were all on the same page was that it was a really dark time for us, and it was a very scary time for us. But we also, you know, we had hope that like we could overcome this, but we needed something positive to put a line in the sand and say, let's make it to that. Like, let's look forward to that. We've got goodness ahead of us. We've got excitement. We've got adventure. That's the way my mom always lived her life. And that's how our whole family lives, is we live for adventure in many ways. So to throw that out at the time when we needed it the most would have been sort of the antithesis of what my family is all about. So we decided, you know, let's do it. And it was really, really hard to know that I was going to be away, and to be away without seeing my family and certainly without access to information.
It's hard to go away and do that when everything is, you know, status quo as you leave. You know, I can't imagine going through something like that and not even being able to check in, not even being able to give them the peace of mind. Hey, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. I found that to be something that I always wish that I could have been able to tell my family that, you know, hey, everything is fine out here. You don't have to, you know, worry about me too much.
Yeah, it's also an incredible amount of pressure. I mean, I said it a couple times, like in confessional and even going into the game, I was like, you know, I can't think of too many people who have had this sort of kind of weight on their shoulders going into the game, because if I leave for 6.5 weeks, I have to make it worth it to my family for me to be gone for this long. So I need to give us as many episodes as possible to watch, because that's what this is all about. We've always watched Survivor together on the couch as a family, and I want to do that same thing, but with, you know, with us being able to watch me on the show. So, you know, there was a lot writing on me doing well.
Now, at the same time that I'm sure it was such a weight on your shoulders during the game, in any way, did you find that it was something that helped you in terms of keeping your focus, where over the course of 39 days that a lot of people may drift and sort of like take their eyes off the prize, but you had something that was keeping you with all of your intention on trying to go the distance and ultimately be the winner?
Yeah, it definitely focused me. And I do think that I'm someone that sort of thrives under very high pressure situations. So when you're in a tough circumstance like that, I think you have sort of two ways of looking at it. You can sort of like go inside yourself and feel sorry for yourself or you can look at it as a motivating factor, like to do everything you can. And I think especially with like looking for idols, like I didn't find the clue or my idol until day 11. And it's at that point you're wondering, like, has somebody already found it? Like if nobody has found it yet, is it possible to find? It's obviously very difficult. We've had 10 or 9 people on this millennial beach and no one's been able to find it. But I was just like, you know, I am out here for one reason. And if this is a tool that's going to help me in the game, like, I need to get after it.
Okay, so let's start to really get into this. So millennials versus Gen X, you're going to be out there with 10 millennials. When you find out it's a millennial tribe, do you feel like that plays into your strengths, or do you feel like that you would have rather been with some of the older players?
Well, I knew that come a swap or a merge, I'd have a chance to connect with some of the older players, you know, if I was able to make it that far. And I knew that I would be able to have an edge there because I do, you know, have good relationships with people from all different generations. Grandmas especially really, really jive with me.
Me too.
I'm a nice Jewish boy, and, you know, I think we can, you know, say similar things about you.
Yes. Not quite as similar, but yeah. We'll
Not
go
as
with
similar,
yeah.
but you're a nice boy. You're a nice boy, Rob.
I try.
So, you know, but I also get along well with my peers. So it was going to be a fun way to, like, you know, just kind of bro down with my peers, and then I can show my more, you know, like mature side, I guess, once we hit a swap.
Okay, so there you are now for the first time, you know, donning the buff there on the beach. Were you like comfortable in the moment? Were you ready to roll, or were you freaking out a little bit?
There's a freeze frame from the first episode where you can see I'm like tearing up. I when I was walking up with Jeff right there, I almost started crying, and I was like, lock this down. You're going to have plenty of time to cry later on, which I sure did. but it was very emotional. Like it really felt like, one, the culmination of many years of dreaming, but also the beginning, of, you know, the dream.
That's like an amazing moment when they give you the buff and you're a survivor now.
It was like, this is really happening. There's all those camera people in front of me. Like, there are going to be millions of people watching this. Like, oh my God, it's actually real.
Okay, so you're there with all the millennials. What's basically from your point of view going on in those first couple of days before you guys get evacuated?
My motto sort of going into the game, something I talked about a lot in casting and then in my pregame interviews, is I am here to make friends. Like there's the line, I'm not here to make friends, that you hear over and over again. And I one of the things I said in casting is, like, if you say I'm not here to make friends, then you are here to lose the game of Survivor, because Survivor, you know, a lot of other super duper fans, you know, might think that just because they know all about numbers and strategy and idols and production and all that stuff, that they're going to be able to win the game. And while that helps, you also have to remember that first and foremost, it is, you know, a social experiment. It's a social game.
And I agree with you on that, that I'm just surprised that that's something that they said, OK, here's a person who says they are there to make friends. Let's put them on the show, because we've talked for some time that the ideal Survivor contestant, at least from a television perspective, is one that's going to have a lot of conflict.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that when they decided to cast me that I was ever going to, in their mind at the time, like, fit the role of a villain, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, they certainly managed to make that happen a little bit in episodes 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. I think they want some people that are like that, and then they want other people that are going to be trying to make enemies or whatever. You know, they've got to get a mix.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, so my feeling going into the game was, I just want to, like, make, you know, real strong bonds and friendships, and then use my super duper fandom to try to figure out which of those relationships are going to help me get all the way to the end of the game.
Okay, so who were you tight with off the bat? Was it the same people that we saw on the show, like the Zeke's and the Hannah's and the Mari's?
One of three anyway. Mari was absolutely my closest ally. I went into the game thinking, I want to find one person who I think is the most likely to be in the majority, no matter how it shakes up. You know, I was imagining all these different types of groups that could be together, and the one, like, consistent piece in my mind was always Mari. You know, and how wrong I was, obviously, but that's who I wanted to sort of hitch my wagon to. That way, I double my chances of being in the majority, or at least if I'm not in the majority, the one person that I align with can protect me if they do get into the majority. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I thought that would be Mari, and, you know, we would we talked strategy a lot. I think we were probably a little too open about it. People obviously saw that we were close. It's why I was kept out of the loop on that first vote. I had a loose alliance with Zeke, but I also saw him as very, very strong socially. And so I definitely saw him as a bit of a threat. And I also thought that Hannah, like, if the Figgy vote had gone my way, I was considering Hannah as a potential target next.
The vote where Mari went home.
So, yeah, if it had gone my way,
yes.
I ended up needing Hannah because Mari went home. So I completely ditched any idea of trying to vote out Hannah after Mari went home. But if Figgy had gone home, then I probably would have, shifted my sights a little bit more towards Hannah, because, you know, I saw that she was playing the game hard and being somewhat successful at it. And I was doing little things to open people's eyes to the fact that she was playing them a little bit. So, like, for example, you know, I would be, like, weaving a palm frond or something, and she would come up and be like, oh, Adam, like, you're so good at that. And I was terrible at it. You know, will you teach me how to do that? Like, oh, you're so smart and I know nothing. And I was like, oh, sure, Hannah. But I was like, yeah, she's playing this little sister role up a little bit. And then 30 minutes later, she goes up to Michelle, like, oh, Michelle, you're so good at weaving palm fronds. Like, can you teach me how to do that? I was like, I just taught you how to do that, and I don't even know how to do it. So I saw her doing little stuff like that. So I thought she was a threat as well. But actually, the people that I was closest to was definitely Mari number one, and then Jay and Michelle. I knew that they were powerful players in the game, and I wanted them on my side because I saw them with really strong relationships across the board, and I wanted them to trust me more than they trusted anybody else. And I think that worked pretty well, because I do think that I was protected on that tribe in a lot of ways because of my relationship with Jay and Michelle.
How much was the Triforce a threat in your mind? You're friends with Jay and Michelle, but were you worried about their ties to Figtails?
Well, certainly that was a thought very early on, is that the four of them would get together. But then one of the things that you didn't see on the show is that, you know, Figgy's in my mind at the time started going crazy, like lying to everybody, making all these deals. She targeted Jay. You know, she told me that Jay was targeting me, and she told, you know, and so I went to, and she was like, but don't talk to Jay about it, or like, you're gone, but I'm protecting you, so don't worry. So she was like doing this whole ringleader thing. And I went up to Jay and I was like, look, like Figgy just told me I'm not allowed to come talk to you and that you're gunning for me. And he's like, that's crazy. And so he got pissed, and he targeted Figgy, and Figgy then targeted Jay. And so it wasn't quite as like, they eventually repaired that in time for the first time we went to Tribal Council. But there was certainly a time where, you know, at least Jay and Figgy weren't nearly as tight as the show was making it seem. And even after the Mari vote, a new majority alliance formed on our beach that included everybody on the tribe except for Figgy, Taylor, and Zeke. And I do think, and even after, you know, listening to like exit interviews and other people talk about it, I think that this was the group that would have moved forward. The big question would have been in what order. I know that Jay and Michelle would have liked to go for Zeke first, whereas maybe me, Will, Michaela, Hannah would have wanted to go for Figgy first.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I knew that Jay and Michelle, while they had our six-person alliance, most likely or almost assuredly also had a four-person alliance with Figgy and Taylor.
So when you guys have the big storm on the second day, right, and that's when you guys get evacuated from the cyclone, how intense was that?
The first night was incredibly intense. I mean, yeah. It was by far the most difficult thing I've ever been through physically. Like, no one except for Will, who somehow miraculously like closed his eyes sitting up in the middle of the rain, no one slept for a second that night, and it was just pounding all night long. So it was brutal, and I was like, oh my god, like if this goes on for the whole time we're out here, like this is going to be beyond my wildest expectations of how difficult it would be. Like, I thought at the time, I was like, this has to be one of the worst storms in Survivor history. Mm-hmm. Like, it has to be, right? And I think I partly convinced myself that because I couldn't even fathom the possibility that it was normal. I was like, if this is normal, I don't know how people survive.
Yeah.
And then, so I was almost like, I felt a little like vindicated in my mind the next day when they evacuated us, because I was like, okay, it wasn't normal. Like, this was an extraordinary storm, even by Survivor standards. But I was so glad that they were taking us out of it, because it was really, really tough.
Was any part of you sort of excited to be in maybe historically the worst Survivor storm and the first Survivor evacuation of tribes?
Yeah, absolutely. That, you know, any, you know, it's always exciting to be a part of Survivor history. Certainly, I just didn't want that to be the weather the whole way through, and then we got lucky from then on out.
Although I think that maybe some of my veteran Survivor brethren might say, "Oh, we had worse storms; they just wouldn't have evacuated us."
look, the producers know what they're doing. Like, they know that when the conditions are severe enough that people are potentially in danger, right? I mean, it was a Category 3 cyclone. So, and I can point to that, like, on the weather record. So if any of your alumni brethren would like to point to the Category 3 cyclone during their season, be my guest.
Okay, so when you guys get back, you win the first challenge. Everything is going really well. I think Steven has said this before, and I mostly agree with the sentiment about, I think he said that is the Millennials tribe the greatest tribe of all time? I said, I think you need to maybe couch that into first time players. But this was a really fun group, the Millennials.
That was really fun for me to hear. I listened to all of your podcasts throughout the whole season. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun to hear. And I'm really thankful that people really enjoyed our tribe. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I had such fun on Millennial Beach and really throughout the entire season. It's just a good group of people. And we had some really fun times out there, many of which you didn't even actually see on the show.
Yeah, everybody contributed something, and it was a really fun group. So, you know, kudos to the casting for finding the 10 of you. So when you guys ultimately get to the point where they have the Mari vote, what is it like? You've spent most of your life following this show. You know, your whole life is preparing you for this moment, your first tribal council, and it's a blind side that you don't see coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could not believe it. I did not understand, even walking out of tribal council, how it could have possibly happened. I knew from sharing glances with Zeke that Zeke was the only other person that wasn't in on it. And I was just like, what? Like, I don't get it. Like, how is it possible that Michaela didn't vote for Figgy and Figgy didn't vote for Michaela? They not only were, like, so vocal about hating each other at camp, but they were going after each other so hard at tribal council, and no one else's name came up at all. And so even walking out, I was trying to think about how does this play on TV? Like, there's always a this or that, right? Like, this is going to happen or that's going to happen. So it's Michaela or Figgy. Like, what's the story of how Mari went home? It didn't come up at tribal council. So I was just racking my brain. I was like, what the hell? And I realized later, of course, that, like, it all happened very last minute. And that was the, you know, part of the brilliance of it is it gave no time for a counterattack. And I learned a lot from that first vote because we had laid the groundwork for the Figgy vote for days and reiterated over and over, and I checked in with people, and people were like, yep, still good, that's still the plan. And every time they told me that, they were telling me the truth, because that was the plan. And, you know, I thought, after we lost the challenge, okay, the plan is in motion, now we just sit back and let it happen. And that was the fatal error. Because, you know, things can change all the way up to tribal council. And so I learned from that I have to continue to play and check in even more so after you lose a challenge and you're about to go into tribal council.
So following that tribal council, you know, we have the scene where you and Zeke are on the beach and Hannah wants to talk about what happened and Zeke needs a minute and she doesn't want to give it to him. How funny was that as it was happening, or was it not funny at all?
It wasn't funny at all. It was pretty astonishing, really. I mean, yeah, I think if it were just me on the beach, I could have had that conversation. Like, you know, I came back and I was instantly thinking, like, how do I get back into the good graces? But Zeke was not ready to talk. I mean, it was just very clear. And the last thing I wanted was for any, like, potential numbers. And at this point, I see Hannah as someone that I need to be in any kind of argument with any other potential people that would be on my side. So I was like, Zeke and Hannah going at each other is not going to be beneficial here. The leave it be message wasn't really getting through. I tried to do it as diplomatically as I possibly could, but it just wasn't registering. But, you know, I think that scene is where the audience starts to think, like, oh, Zeke and Adam are really tight.
Mm-hmm.
But Zeke openly said when we got back to camp, he's like, I'm on the bottom with this guy? I don't even trust him. like he said that out loud. And I was like, oh, well, okay, thanks. And then he proceeded to actually gun after me openly until the swap.
Yeah.
So Zeke and I were not tight allies on Millennial Beach, and he was actively coming after me, and I didn't respond back by going after him, and I think that's part of the reason why I sort of earned his trust by the time the merge came around.
Yeah, okay, well, that's totally news to me, because I would have thought that you guys were completely working together against, you know, the Triforce plus.
No.
Yeah.
So you didn't see anything from Zeke about what his plans were, and part of that is because his plans were to go after me. So while I'm trying to round up the troops for my alliance to target Figgy first instead of him, you know, he's trying to throw me under the bus, but it would not have worked. Figgy or Zeke would have been the next to go, and other millennials have corroborated that in sort of other exit press.
So when you go and talk to Michaela and she's not really receptive into what you're selling, what is it, the plan that you're trying to get her to buy into? Is it this plan?
So at this point, Michaela and I are already, we are in an alliance. And Hannah was in that scene and she is a part of that alliance. So it's not so much like I'm trying to get her on my side. It's a conversation of who should be the first to go, from, you know, an internal like alliance conversation perspective. So, you know, my pitch is that if we allow Zeke to go home next, then we are totally at the mercy of Michelle and Jay, because then they have to make a decision. Do they want to go with their 4-person alliance with Figgy and Taylor, or with the 6-person alliance that we're in with them? And it's totally their call which way they want to go, and it could be any of us next. Whereas if our 6 plus Zeke targeted Figgy first, then we're more in the middle of the group, and it's not only Michelle and Jay that get to decide who goes home next. And so I had talked, even Michelle and Jay knew that my preference was to vote out Figgy next, but I had told them, of course, that I would be willing to vote out Zeke if that's what our group decided to do. So it was about who could control the narrative within the group. Michaela was going to be the key component there, because Will said he was willing to do it during the game, and then he said on Happy Hour that actually would have been his plan. Hannah was definitely on board, and, you know, as long as it wasn't going to be Zeke, Zeke was obviously going to be willing to write down Figgy's name. He just didn't want it to be him. So it really was going to hinge on if Michaela was on board, and she told me later that she would have been.
So speaking of Michaela, she's going to be coming back for season 34. You're going to have the tribe swap coming up, and that's going to be the last you're going to see of her in the game. What was your impression of her that you got from the, you know, 11 or 12 days that you spent with her in the Millennial Tribe?
So the first few days were really rough for Michaela's game, because she didn't seem to be having very much fun with Storm, and she got a bit ostracized for reasons that I'm still not totally clear on. I think part of it was, again, Hannah playing really hard at the beginning of the game, and she actually went up to Figgy at one point, and this is all stuff that she's told me after the game, but she said that she went up to Figgy and said, "Figgy, I heard you were making fun of me," which she hadn't heard. She totally just made that up. And Figgy said, "Oh, did Michaela say that?" And Hannah said, "Yes."
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then Figgy started, and this may have been the reason that Figgy started to gun after Michaela. And Figgy, as I said, was kind of doing the whole ringleader thing. Say, like, don't talk to this person. Like, and so no one wants to be the person that is going to try to flip the script on no one wants to be the first person to try to flip the script on Figgy in those first couple days. Right. So as far as ever, as we're all concerned, she's like, okay, Michaela's going home. And I think the evacuation really helped Michaela a lot, because it allowed us to see her in a more normal environment where she wasn't like wearing her emotions on her sleeve, and that it was kind of miserable. And we had a lot of fun with her during the evacuation. Like, we weren't allowed to talk about our personal stories or the game, like any strategy stuff. But, you know, we were talking about like TV or, you know, pop culture. We could talk about stuff like that. And so she just let her goofy side out a bit. And I think that helped a lot in terms of us as a tribe getting closer to Michaela. So Michaela, like, very much wears her feelings and her emotions on her face, and she will be the first to admit that. And she is open about who she trusts and she doesn't trust, or at least was, you know, in the game that I played with her, and to the point where at one point right before the swap, she came to me and she said, "I don't trust Michelle." And I realized that Michelle knew that. So I went back to her and I said, "Hey, you know, Michaela, did you happen to tell Jay that you don't trust Michelle?" And she said, "Yeah, of course I did." And I had to sort of point it out that I was like, well, Jay is telling everything to Michelle. So, and then at that point she said, "You know, maybe I shouldn't trust Jay as much as I thought I could." And that was like the last conversation that we had before going into the swap. And up until this point, Michaela and Jay have been super, super tight. And I think it's possible that that sort of seed of doubt in her mind, that Jay recognized that at Ikabula. And it maybe was one of the reasons why he decided to vote her out, because Jay is very, very good at the game and he can read it on your face if you don't trust him.
So it's your fault Michaela got voted out?
No, I'm not I'm not taking like any sort
of mad.
No, I'm not taking any sort of blame or credit for that. But, you know, Michaela is the kind of player that once she thinks about something or realizes something, it's hard for her to hide that.
Mm.
She also continued to openly target or talk about targeting some of Jay's closest allies, like Figgy, like Michelle, in terms of who she wanted to go for right at the merge.
Let me bring it back to you and ask, you know, so much has been made about you and your brutal honesty, and tell me if that you feel like that is an unfair way of looking at how you've played the game. But people, and when I spoke to David, it was one of the things that he gave you credit for. And Will did as well in his interview with Jordan about how you said what you meant. And, you know, we sort of look at that as a negative with Michaela, but a positive with you. So how do you reconcile those two things?
Well, you have to be very deliberate about when you choose to reveal the full truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me, like revealing that Jay had told Michelle, about what Michaela said, you know, I wouldn't have said that if I didn't think it was going to be good for my game, because I wanted Michaela to be closer to me than she was to Jay. You know, I saw Jay and Michelle coalescing all of this power, and I knew that eventually, while I was tight with them at the time, I knew eventually we would have to break that up, and I would need allies in order to do that. And so I said my motto throughout the first half of the game was, truth is power. I said that in confessional all the time, that if you are able to show someone that you are telling the truth, and they, you know, because there's this perception for some reason, even in my real life, like when I'm being sarcastic and like telling a half truth or something, like people believe it. And then when I'm telling the truth, people don't believe it. So it's like, you know, so I had to show people that I was telling the truth, because they didn't necessarily trust me right off the bat. They, you know, I appear to be like a schemer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone that's potentially dishonest. That's just, I guess, the vibe I put out there. Over and over again, people weren't sure if they could trust me right off the bat. But then I would show them that I was telling the truth, or I would bring them information that I could corroborate with somebody else that showed that I was being genuine. Once you've doubted someone and then you realize that you shouldn't have doubted them, it makes you maybe even trust them more than you even should.
Mm-hmm.
And that was powerful in the game.
Before you guys get to the swap, you're also going to find the hidden immunity idol on the beach. Just take us through a little bit of how you came across the hidden immunity idol. It seems like in the episode, everybody's going to go off and look for a goat. You are staying behind. Is that as it was depicted?
So at the time, people were like, we're going to go look for a goat. And it was like Figgy. And I was like, oh, okay, sure you are. Like, you're not going to go look for a goat. You're going to go look for the idol. But that's okay. And I think they ended up having to actually look for a goat because people like Zeke went along, you know. I actually still think that wasn't like the original plan, you know. That was just the right. fake plan. But then when everyone comes, it's like, oh, I guess we're actually gonna go look for a goat now. So you know, they absolutely were taking every opportunity to go look for idols. And I believe the editing was a little bit out of order in the sense that the goat hunt was after I found the clue. So that morning I found the clue, and then I needed an excuse to get away again to go and actually find the idol. And I think that's when like all the goat stuff was happening. And then when I saw them up on the hill, I was like, oh my God, and this is what I said on the show. I was like, they're actually like hunting for a goat. Not because I was I was just surprised that they weren't just looking for an idol.
Yeah,
I was like, there's no idol up on that hill. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And then Hannah comes over, and what is it that she says to you in the episode? Like, did you find the
How's
idol?
How's your
yet?
Idol search going, buddy?
Yeah.
Something like that. So she had, I was worried that she had seen me, obviously, but she didn't. But I had told a number of people, like, we have to find this idol today. Like, as I even might have said it to the whole tribe at one point, after I found the clue, knowing that they would go into the forest and not find anything, mm-hmm. and to give me a cover to go onto the beach where I knew the idol would be because of my clue. But, you know, I was saying to everybody, I was like, we have to find this today because there very well may be a swap tomorrow. And the last thing we want is for the Gen Xers to come to this camp and find our idol. So that morning when I found the clue, I had said to Jay, because Jay was one of my closest allies at this point, I was like, I'm gonna go search for a bit, like, do you want to come? And he was like, I'll catch up with you. And it was before, you know, he never actually came to catch up with me, and that's when I found the clue. But there is something about the 2 days that I found the idol that where it was the absolute last day that I could find them, because I had a feeling a swap was coming the next day the first time. Mm-hmm. And the last time it was day 37, and it's the last day an idol can be played. And those mornings when I went out to go search, I said, I am finding this idol today. And I ran out into the jungle. And I think by doing that, I like heightened my own adrenaline level. And when you do that, your eyes get sharper. And, you know, I looked in like some of the same places, but I was way more deliberate about how I was looking. I wasn't just meandering. I think people meander too often when they look for idols. I think you have to crouch down, stand on your tippy toes, like really get in there. 'Cause it was hard to, it would have been very easy to miss that clue. It was just sitting on the side of the tree, and I had looked at that tree a few times already and missed it.
You can't half-ass looking for idols.
You cannot. And those 2 days I found it, I decided I am going after it. And I actually found a clue first both times, even the second time. You didn't see it on the show, but I found the clue first before I found the idol.
Okay, so you get to the tribe swap. Now, are you happy for the tribe swap? Because it sounds like, I mean, in terms of viewing the show, it looked like, oh, wow, Adam is really on the bottom. And he's going to, you know, this tribe swap really helps him to get out of that spot. But was that the case in real life?
So while I was on the bottom of the first vote at Millennial Camp, they didn't tell me about it because I was too close to Mari. I strongly believe, and still to this day, and I think other people would say the same, that I was not on the bottom of the Millennial Camp. Definitely Zeke or Figgy would have been the next to go. And probably if we had lost twice, those would have been the two people to go.
If we had lost more than that, then I could have, you know, been in trouble. But I think that was unlikely that we were going to like lose four times before any kind of swap happened. So, I had a working relationship with everyone on my tribe except for Figgy and Taylor. And so I say that in confessional before going into the swap, like I'd be happy like with anybody except I'd be nervous. I don't know that I could ever work with Figgy and Taylor.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, the only two millennials on my tribe are Figgy and Taylor. But I do like the composition of it in the sense that, you know, they're a clear pair on one side, and then you have two Gen Xers. And so my first thought is I'm likely the swing vote here. I'm likely the person in the middle, although you can't get too comfortable with that idea. And I absolutely had to feel out the dynamics of the tribe in order to sort of feel confident about that. But I also thought that we were the strongest tribe physically. So I was like, we may not ever lose. How wrong was I? We could not finish. We always did well in the first part of the challenge, but the first part of the challenge never matters. It always comes down to that final piece. And we just couldn't close in a lot of those challenges. But I had a good feeling going into the tribe swap. Even though it was Figgy and Taylor that were on my side.
All right, so you come out with Figgy and Taylor and then with Ken and Jessica. Did you get a good vibe off of Ken and Jessica at the start?
Yeah, you know, I obviously was like, all right, Ken, this is a guy who's going to help us a lot in challenges. I saw Jessica as, you know, someone who seemed like a really like level-headed kind of person that I might be able to work with. She appeared to be very nervous about this swap. And so I saw that as an opportunity to make her feel way more comfortable with me in particular, because I knew that she would be worried that if we would lose, if the millennials stick together, they're not necessarily going to want to get rid of Ken, who's going to be great in challenges. And so she could be an obvious target.
So how much did Figgy and Taylor then cater to trying to keep you happy? Did they do it at all?
Well, it became pretty clear to me that they had no idea that I was that I had been gunning for them on the millennial camp, which was great for me. You know, they knew obviously that I voted for Figgy at the first vote, but they really placed the blame on that, on Mari and on Zeke. And they just thought that Zeke was sneaky and that he was lying to them about how I was coming after them, because they hadn't heard it from anyone else, which again speaks to the loyalty that I had with like Michelle or Jay, who easily could have told them that I was actively gunning after them. So that helped a lot, the fact that they didn't know. And Figgy even like prayed that I would, that she prayed, she had like a list of people that she wanted to be on a swap tribe with, and I was surprisingly one of them. So they trusted me, and of course their best option is Millennial Strong. And while we didn't have a working relationship at the Millennial tribe, on to Kali we started to form a really strong bond, and we actually got along personally really well. We always had. I just didn't trust her in the game. But we started to build game trust as well. And so I had 7 days with Figgy and Taylor at Takali where we just continued to build, you know, strong bonds with each other.
Even though Taylor in his confessionals talked about that maybe Adam is smarter than I think, but
unlikely.
Yeah, and I think part of that is that we were getting along really well, and they trusted me, and I could relate to them, and I wasn't like, you know, there's been this narrative, you know, both on podcasts and even a little bit on the show from like Hannah and Zeke, that it was like, you know, there's the cool kids and then there's the nerds. But Taylor, Figgy, and I got along really well. There was no like, oh, they're the two cool kids and I'm the outsider. You know, we gelled as a tribe, all five of us, really.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying don't lump me in with you nerds?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the world necessarily from that kind of worldview. I don't consider, you know, myself to be like either a cool kid or just a nerd or whatever. I certainly have nerdy characteristics about myself. But you know, I don't know. I look at people as people and don't
put me in a box.
Yeah, exactly. I was like in high school, I was always the floater. Like I was friends with the jocks and the theater kids and the, you know, and everything in between.
You're the great uniter.
Yeah. Well, okay. Sure. Yeah. The floater.
Yeah. Floaters need a life vest. That's a negative.
Not that kind of floater.
So let's talk about the vote where Figgy ultimately goes home. And this was something, you know, even on the podcast from right after the swap, you were saying, okay, Adam, you know what to do. Vote out Figgy, but you've said that it wasn't as clear cut of a decision in your mind.
No, absolutely not, because you know, we had been building this bond, and right before the swap, we all came together as a millennial tribe and said, you know, let's stay together and take out these Gen Xers, and especially if anyone gets a shot at Ken, take it. Like he was like the enemy of the millennials,
apparently.
Well, I mean, and it was because of like some of the things that he like said on the mat and, yes. And, you know, the way he like sort of talked, about us or at us or whatever. And he was just sort of the symbol of the Gen X.
Will talked about that with Jordan. Yeah.
So we were all like, everyone was like, got to get that Ken guy out. So, you know, what is one of the most important things to that vote that you didn't see on television, and I was surprised didn't make the air because it was a huge deal, was that at that challenge that we lost, Will turns to me from the bench and he says, vote Figgy. And I was very confused by that because we had said we were going to like stick together as millennials. And so then I look to his tribe and Michaela's like, uh-huh, like vote Figgy. And she's and I thought that Jay was saying the same thing. You know, he said later that he was actually like making a signal that was supposed to represent abs, which was supposed to represent Ken. It was there were many steps there that I would have had to figure out in order to deduce that he was trying to tell me to vote out Ken. But
yeah,
at the time,
vote charades.
Yeah, right.
That's a new twist for the think tank. Instead of voting, you just do the charade for Jeff and he guesses who you're voting for.
Yeah, that's... I tried to do that with my Sunday vote, you know, just draw the sun instead of instead of write the name down.
But let's get back to this. I'm sorry to take you off what we're talking about. But so this is the challenge where not only is this happening, but also Michaela is giving Zeke and Michelle advice on how to complete the maze so that they will win and send you to Tribal Council.
And now you know why she was doing that.
Yeah.
Because, and she said, you know, on the show, she said, well, if they can't figure it out, they deserve to go home. And everyone at home watching is like, oh, Michaela's going to be upset that Adam turned on the millennials. Uh-uh. Not at all. She was the one that wanted to make it happen. And so, you know, I got back to camp and I have a huge decision to make. If I decide to vote out Figgy, I have the out of basically throwing it back on the Ikabula millennials and saying, well, you know, this is like what they told me to do. The problem is that Ken had like pretty much never spoken with me strategically, you know, and this whole time I've been thinking, well, it doesn't really matter because, you know, if we lose, we're going to vote him out and that's going to be all right. But now that with new information, it's like, well, should I side with the Gen Xers? But if I do, I want to build an alliance out of it. I don't just want to do it just for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. And Jessica and I were way, 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 way closer than you saw on TV. Like we had hundreds of conversations, both personal to, you know, getting to know each other and you know, coming to appreciate each other. And then obviously strategic as well. And you saw none of it on the show. And Ken and I had two strategic conversations in total prior to that vote. And you saw both of them. So finally, after some, you know, a little bit of prodding from Jessica, Ken says the words that I need to hear to make me feel like, okay, this is a move that I can make. He says, I will never write your name down. Yeah. And the thing that I had learned about Ken is that he means what he says, right? Mm-hmm. So that was huge to me. And you can kind of see the smile creep across my face when he says that, because it's like, now I've got my bases covered on both sides. If I vote out Figgy, the millennials are going to be okay with it because they asked me to do it. I'm going to solidify a long-term alliance with Ken and Jessica, and I'm going to signal to the rest of the Gen Xers, I am willing to work with you, to the point where it will give me options at the merge, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, so you go through it, and no hint of what you were going to do to Figgy? You don't, like, give her a heads up or anything like that?
So I told Figgy and Taylor, the millennials told me to vote out Figgy. So they knew that before the vote, right? In either case, I wanted to do that, because if I kept with them and I voted out Ken, I wanted them to know that their friends weren't necessarily all their friends, and that could help me at the merge. And if I did vote out Figgy, it was already, you know, a baseline understanding of why I did it.
So we've outlined all the reasons why this is a great move, but this is going to create some headaches for you moving forward, because Taylor is left in the game and he's pretty upset about the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was one of the big holdups on not going through with it, because one, I would be sort of drawing first blood with the millennials, and for the millennials that weren't on board with voting out Figgy, how might that impact my standing with them, such as like Michelle? And then the other main factor is, you know, Taylor, how will Taylor react? Will he be able to get over it and move forward and be able to, like, you know, sort of put that behind him and play like, you know, strategically? Or is this gonna, you know, control the narrative from here on out? And I tried to do everything that I could to minimize the blowback from that, which you saw one very, very, very small piece of in the now infamous "I screwed you" moment. But there was obviously way more to that conversation. And by the time we left Tecali, I felt like Taylor and I were, it was never going to be the same, but we were back on pretty good terms. And I still think that there was a moment between when Figgy was voted out and when Taylor decided to turn on me by telling my plan to Will and Jay, that there was at least a moment within there where he genuinely wanted to work with me. So I don't think he totally had this, like, revenge thing all the way along the way. I think there were times where he was like, maybe we can actually do something here.
Okay, so you guys will then eventually get to the merge, and now here you are, and you feel like you're set up pretty well, right?
Yeah, so we get to the merge, and, you know, once I hear about what happened at Ikebula, and how Hannah was left out of that, Hannah pretty easily falls back in with me. Then Zeke, you know, now knows that I was telling him the truth at Millennial Camp and had never gunned after him, even though I knew that he was gunning after me. We both knew that. So then I had that trust with him. I've obviously got Ken and Jessica, and with them comes Dave, and I knew that from Tecali when they said, if you align with us, you align with Dave as well. So to me, that's already six people that are in an alliance with me, really. So the question becomes, how do we get a seventh, or even a seventh, eighth, and ninth, as we ended up getting, out of this group to come along and vote with us? Going into the merge, this is, and I said this in confessional, I said, you know, as a huge fan, I know from, like, listening to your podcast and going on the Survivor subreddit and whatever and reading all these things, that the winner was in the majority vote in the first vote of the merge over 90% of the time. Right? I know that statistic.
Yes.
So to me,
good stat.
I said, this is the single most important vote of the entire game. Right here, right now. we're going to find out if I'm in this majority group and have a real shot to make it to the end, or if I'm going to have to fight from the bottom for the rest of the time. And so I decided I am going to do everything I possibly can to get as many people on my side on this vote, even if it means that if it doesn't work, I'm the one that goes home. Because being in the minority in that first vote at the merge is almost as bad as getting voted out as the first one at the merge. Just history just isn't on their side, especially with 13 people at the merge. That's a long time to claw your way from the bottom.
It's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. So, you know, I did some things that I wouldn't have done in other rounds of the game to try to pull people onto my side.
Okay.
And one of them you saw on TV, and that's the conversation I have with Taylor.
Okay, well, let's get into that. But just that you bring up some new information for me, or old information that I forgot about being in the majority at the merge vote. Do you think that, is this some advice that you would pass on to future survivors that are listening to this? Do you think that they should play more aggressively at that first vote to get the merge started on the right foot?
Yes, but with the caveat of, if it goes your way, you cannot continue to try to run the game from then on out. Maybe in the days of, you know, Redemption Island or One World, that was possible. But now, with the number of fans that are being cast, and with the knowledge that people have about the game and how you have to take out threats, if you try to run the show from the moment there's 13 people left in the game through 10 votes until the final three, you're going to get called out at some point as the biggest threat in the game. So if you run that vote, if you take control at the merge, you need to be able to then sit back after. And, you know, I'm not saying that I ran the vote at the merge. All I'm saying is that it went my way and then I sat back. And every time I put my foot on the pedal, I then released it a little bit to make sure that I wouldn't be the most visible target in the game at any point.
Okay, so just to back up, before you talk to Taylor, also, you come across the advantage, which is the reward steal. I have that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so when you find that piece of information that you can steal someone's reward, just take us through your thoughts, because we speculated so much during the season of what you were thinking having that in your possession.
I instantly, this is, you know, one of the times where the edit cut out sort of one half of what I was saying and left the other half. My very first reaction when I read it was disappointment, because one, I thought it was going to be a clue to an idol. And I recognized, I was like, this is dangerous, right? This is, I was like, this isn't an advantage. Like, I get to like ruin someone's day. That sounds terrible. And so, you know, in the confessional where you see me saying like, oh, I'm so excited. Like, this is survivor history. Like, that was after saying, this is, you know, really dangerous. I need to figure out the right time to play it, but it's also really cool that I have it and that I'm a part of survivor history.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at every point of the way, I'm thinking, how can this work for my game as a whole? And I had to think about it a lot, and I ultimately came to the decision I did, which I think worked out really, really well for me.
Do you think that the reward steal will be used in future seasons?
I think Survivor likes to sort of play with something once and then let it sit for a few seasons, and then bring it back at some point.
Okay.
Like, even the hidden immunity idol was something that, you know, came up in Guatemala, and then they let it sit for a little bit and then they brought it back. And I think the same thing for like Exile Island. So I think with these early you know, forms of these twists, they like to try it out and then let it sit, and then eventually it'll be back.
All right. So let's then get into your conversation with Taylor. And, you know, this is a point in the game that probably that I would say strategically is the point where you got the most grief from people like myself, and I'm sure others across the internet, over these two episodes here right at the merge.
Yeah. And I will say, before I get into it, two things. One, I definitely made mistakes at this point of the game. Number two, I pretty much know just from even conversations with them from during finale week that production went out of their way to make it seem like these mistakes were more damaging than they really were. You know, that it would potentially end my game when I never really, except for the very first vote of the merge, was in any danger of even being targeted, really, let alone actually going home. But certainly it worked because, you know, I kept hearing and reading that, oh, Adam's gone. If not next, then the episode after that, like for sure, over and over and over again. So the editors did a great job in sort of creating that surprising outcome.
Okay.
Anyway, so with that being said, I definitely obviously made some mistakes here, but most of it I don't regret. So with that conversation with Taylor, what you see on the show is me waking up in the middle of the night to go and catch him and have that conversation with him. And that's not really how it happened. The clip of me waking up is actually from something completely different where I got up in the middle of the night because I thought that on the Merge Feast box, there was the logo of our tribe, like on a piece of paper, basically on top, and it was tied to the box. And I knew from having found the first idol that the logo of the tribe meant an idol. So in the middle of the night, I got up to cut it off of the box, thinking that there would be like a clue underneath for the location of the idol. So it was a big wild goose chase, but, you know, the cameraman had a lot of fun with that in the middle of the night. So I remember when they were filming me all that night as I like kept trying to like sneakily wake up and cut this thing off in the middle of the camp.
Okay.
So that's what that was from. When I was talking to Taylor, we actually, this was maybe the third night in a row, second night in a row at least, that we had had sort of a secret midnight rendezvous. So we had been building this sort of secret alliance over the last few days, and it makes it look like I just came out of nowhere with all of this information when we had been, you know, like I said, building this for a number of days where we wouldn't talk at all during the day, and then he would either come get me or I would come get him in the middle of the night, and we'd go off and talk a bit and share information. And so in front of me, he decides, he goes off and he comes back with this food. And he's like, I'm taking this food, basically. And he tells it to me. So he shared information first. I didn't catch him doing this. He did it right in front of me. Mm-hmm. And he was like, this will be our little secret. So the fact that he was sharing information with me told me that he still trusted me. So I was like, well, if he still trusts me, then I can maybe trust him. And so I decided to share the reward advantage because it was the lesser of the two advantages that I had, the other being the idol. So it had the blowback potential was much less than if I had, like, say, told him about the idol. But it was also a sign of trust. And I needed a seventh because we had six people. And I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to get Chris, Brett, and Sunday on our side because Chris and Jess and Sunday and Jess had this bad blood from Takali. And on top of that, Brett and Sunday had just voted with Will and Jay in the very last vote at Ikebula.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, I have no reason to believe that they're going to go against Will and Jay at this point. So I'm scrambling for that seventh. And I think maybe Taylor could be that seventh. If he trusts me enough to steal food from the tribe in front of me, then maybe he'll vote with us. So I took a gamble. I told him about the advantage. What I should not have done, obviously, was throw a name out. Mm-hmm. I think, unquestionably a mistake.
Because just for in case people don't remember, you tell him that, hey, why don't we get rid of Jay? And then
Will,
that, and,
not I'm, Jay.
Okay, sorry. So for the me that doesn't remember also, let's get rid of Will because then he is too much of a pawn for Jay.
So it was more than that. So one of the reasons we talked about was that he was getting too close to Jay. And I knew that Taylor wanted to be Jay's right hand. And he didn't like that Will had sort of usurped his position as Jay's best friend. So I was appealing to a little bit of his relationship with Jay there, and not in the sense that we're going after Jay, but that this will bring Jay back in with us. Just like how when they voted out Mari, it brought me back in with them. Sort of a similar thing. But then the real reason why it was Will's name that I threw out there, the main thing that we were talking about related to what you didn't see on television with Will telling me to vote out Figgy. Mm-hmm. So Will tells me to vote out Figgy. I tell Taylor that. When we get to the merge, Will goes up to Taylor and denies it and says that he told me to vote out Ken. And it's a lie. And I call Will out for that publicly, not publicly, but in front of the other, like, millennials, at least. And he admits that he was lying about that. So now he's lied to Taylor about me. So we have a reason, both of us, to connect over this mutual, like, bond of Will trying to play us.
How big of a deal is that when someone is, like, publicly caught in a lie?
It's huge. And up yeah. until this point, you know, I have been playing the game with this whole truth is power thing, right? And so, again, this is one of those situations where by revealing the truth, that we're, especially where somebody else has told a lie, that's a very powerful thing. And Taylor was not happy, obviously, with Will, you know, so because Will had targeted his girlfriend and lied about it. Yeah. Or at least I had been upfront about why I did it, and here's exactly what happened, and he knew the full story. I also had told Taylor something that he couldn't fact check, which was that Figgy told me that if it got down to just me, Taylor, and Figgy, that she would vote out Taylor. And that I knew that she was lying to me because, of course, she would never vote you out. But the fact that she was continuing to lie to me meant that, you know, I couldn't trust her and it was a reason to vote her out.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't necessarily happen, but, you know, it was another thing to try to get, like, Taylor sort of to be okay again with me, because I really genuinely was willing to work with him.
Okay. So then after this, then they go back and they tell Will about the plan. And then that's why Will feels like he needs to win immunity. Do I have that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Will ultimately comes away with the immunity necklace. At what point do they switch for the millennial guys to want to come after you?
They want to come after me because they find out that I was gunning after Will.
Mm-hmm. What's the straw that broke the back for Taylor?
So I think, you know, if you watch that scene again with Taylor and Jay, when he tells Jay that I was gunning after Will, with the additional information that I was just talking about and this lens that Taylor and I were, like, kind of genuinely working together for at least a few days, it looks like a very different scene. Because Taylor says, like, what would you think about voting out a millennial? And so he's testing the waters. And again, I could be totally wrong, but from everything that I've heard since and whatever, Taylor, in my mind, was testing the waters with Jay to see if he would be willing to vote out Will. Not me. When he's talking about, would you be willing to vote out a millennial? And he says, what do you think about, like, what's your thoughts on Will? And Jay says, Will's great. He's with us, right? And so Jay basically makes a more compelling pitch to Taylor that Will is good, that Will does not need to go home. So now Taylor's like, well, if I'm not going to vote with Adam, then I might as well vote against him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's when it changes. Once he decides that he's not going to go along with this Will plan, the only other rational option is, well, then I should vote him out.
What you're saying is that Taylor was not fueled by as much animosity towards you as was depicted on the show.
I really don't think so. I mean, certainly that was part of it, right? Like, he never obviously fully got over me voting out Figgy, but I wasn't the only person he was upset with. He was also very upset at Will for the same thing. You know, the vengeance for Figgy wasn't only directed at me. There were a lot of people that he held or could hold responsible for that. So it was a question of who could, you know, craft the better narrative moving forward. And that's what Jay is really great at doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Michelle goes home, the first vote after the merge. Do you feel like you're out of the woods now with this?
So let me just go back to right before that vote, if I may, in terms of playing my idol or not, because I know that that was a big question. Like, so what I did going into the vote was, you know, Zeke claimed that Chris was on our side, right? And with Chris came Brett and Sunday. And so that sounds great. And at this point, I'm not going around scrambling to try to get more votes. I just want to make sure that Zeke's read is right, because Zeke and Hannah are saying this is the way it is, but they've been wrong before, you know? Mm-hmm. So I want to see with my own eyes, do I believe what Chris and Brett and Sunday are saying? Because if not, then I need to play my idol. So that scrambling that I was doing right before Tribal Council was to find out, do I need to play this idol or not? And I figured if any of the three of them even come off as an ounce, like lying to me or dishonest, then I'm going to play my idol. And I talked to all three of them, and I bought that they were telling me the truth, that they were going to vote out Michelle. In addition, I told Jessica about my idol, because I wanted a second set of eyes. I said, look, I'm willing to play this idol for you in the future. So it's in both of our best interest for me to, one, still be in the game, because if I'm gone, the idol's also gone, and you lose a great ally. And two, if I am still in the game, it's better for me to have the idol so that I can play it for you in the future, potentially, that we can use it together. So we had two sets of eyes trying to figure out if we had the votes. She determined that we did. I also determined that we did. And that's the reason why I held on to the idol.
All right. So Taylor is a dead man walking at this point, where it's very clear he's going to be the next person to go out if he doesn't win immunity. Jay also feeling like he's at the bottom. And this is where you end up having that conversation with Jay. And he asks if he's on the bottom. You tell him he is on the bottom, and then he complains that you were being very mean to him.
Yeah. Here's another one of the places where, I do it perfectly? Absolutely not. Like, the ideal situation after that is I give him no information, but he also doesn't think that I'm being a jerk, right? Now, was I being, like, outrageously mean? Absolutely not. And do I think that his interpretation of it was a little bit overblown?
Let's do it over again. I'll be Jay. You be you on the second time around. Adam, man, tell me the truth. Am I on the bottom?
You know, look, all I know is the way the votes went last night, and I'm not sure what's going to happen from here.
Come on, you know.
How's that?
You know. Come on. Tell me, just be straight with me.
Look, after, you know, you guys just voted for me, right? So I'm not going to be, like, totally willing to just jump right back into bed with you, Jay. You know, I don't know what to tell you.
Try this. How about, are you familiar with the phrase bottom-ish? That sort of, that light, that softens it.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Is that what I should have done?
Yeah, I wouldn't say bottom. I feel like that you're more bottom-ish.
Oh, man. People are going to have fun with the Jay and Adam bottom conversation.
Bottom-ish.
Yeah, bottom-ish. No, look, the point there was that I just wanted to give Jay absolutely nothing to work with, right? If I would have told him, yeah, I'm willing to work with you, I knew he would run right back and be like, you know, yeah, Adam's so untrustworthy. Like, he's already told me he's willing to vote with me to like get rid of you guys. So I wanted to give him no bit of like verifiable information that I was willing to do anything else than what I had told my alliance that I was going to do. You know, people were like, you gave Taylor way too much information. And then like, oh, you were a jerk to Jay. But I'm just trying to get out of that conversation without giving him any ounce more information than he already has. I wanted him to be scared because I wanted him to play an idol if he had one.
Yeah, and those two guys are going to come up with this plan where they're going to try to blow you up at Tribal Council, where nobody is giving them any indication whether it's going to be Jay or Taylor at Tribal Council. So what they're going to do, once Taylor tells Jay about you have the reward steal, they start trying to out you at Tribal Council about this. And did anybody else know that this was a thing before you went to that Tribal Council?
I had told Jessica.
Okay. And so did you have any suspicion that this might happen?
Yeah, I was worried that Taylor could blow up the secret, but the only thing that kept me thinking that he might not is the fact that I had his. And I thought that his secret was, you know, a bit more damning than the one that he had on me, which is that he was stealing food.
How much of a secret was that, though? It seemed like that there were people
that knew.
It was
a secret. No. And people who claim that they knew, they're talking about something else entirely, which is Taylor, like, going into the, you know, food in the middle of the night and eating there. But that's entirely different than stowing away jars and jars of extra food mm-hmm. on the beach. So people saw him eating way more than his share, but no, you know, and some people may have used the word stealing to describe mm-hmm. that. But that's not the same thing as actually like stealing food away from camp and burying it somewhere else.
But in fairness, that didn't he have a medical issue with his stomach?
Yeah, because he need, you know, there were these the banana chips would help with that. So, you know.
He had chronic empty stomach.
Yeah, no, he was feeling, you know, it was flowing through him, Rob.
Yes. Okay.
That's right. What you need the ginger for.
Yes. Okay. So tell me about what's going through your head as those guys are trying to blow this up for you, where Adam has a reward steal. He's going to steal your family visit.
So to be very clear, this, I was never going to go home at this Tribal Council. And there was no doubt in my mind throughout any of this that it was still going to go the way that we intended it to go. That wasn't necessarily the case for the viewing audience. And like you talked about on your podcast with Dave, there was one point where he says, this is going to end badly for one of you. And they made it look like he was talking about me or Taylor. But it was actually talking about Jay or Taylor, mm-hmm. right? But in terms of my behavior at this Tribal Council, even though I knew that the votes weren't going to come my way, it was very important for me in my real life that I defend my character here. Because it was, you know, while it was a game move, it was a game move based on, a character assassination. Mm-hmm. And I work for a homeless shelter nonprofit, and this isn't the kind of thing that I want to be associated with. We're talking about real life and real perceptions here. So, I absolutely, you know, wanted to defend myself. People are like, why was he so defensive? Because I was literally literally defending myself. Like,
well, what is the charge that you were so upset about, that you were going to take somebody's reward, or that you also were stealing the food?
Well, my argument was, no, they were saying that I was stealing and eating the food.
Mm-hmm.
And that just wasn't true.
Yeah.
My biggest sin here was not saying anything about it to the tribe, but the reason I didn't do it was because I felt at the time that I needed Taylor on my side. And in the game of Survivor, when someone has a secret and you need their vote, you don't blow up their secret. You just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then once I, you know, shared a secret of my own, I had this additional reason to not tell people, which is that then he would tell people about my advantage. So there are very specific game reasons why I wouldn't say anything. Whereas in my normal life, if someone were doing something like that, I would say something.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is the game of Survivor. But I wouldn't go so far as to involve myself in it when eating it or stealing more of it myself was going to have no impact on my, you know, ability to do well in the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you feel like that people who were watching the show came away with a negative impression of you because of what those guys were saying?
I think that in combination with the scene with Jay made it look like not only was I frantic and, you know, at the bottom of the tribe and like not doing well, but that the people out there didn't like me as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they showed this one absolutely blew my mind, that they showed a confessional of Zeke talking about how big of a jerk I was being to Jay for a scene that he wasn't even present for. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how small of a percentage, and it's far less than 1% of the footage that they film ends up in the actual show.
Yeah.
And they decided to use a confessional from a guy that wasn't even involved in the scene that he was referencing, which is a very strange move. And it throws everything that you have ever like believed about like the winner's edit out the window, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of things there, and I definitely can understand why you might feel that way. But I don't think that anybody, you know, who watches the show closely came away with any sort of negative opinion about you as a person. Maybe myself included, we said, okay, at times, like, what is going on here? Why is this happening? But I just don't want you to think that anybody came away with a negative perception.
I did appreciate that the show in the episode before showed a clip of me denying an offer for food, you know, mm-hmm. which happened multiple times. Even after the vote where Michelle went home, Taylor and I had that conversation on the beach where we reminded each other that we had each other's secrets. And then you saw us go off in different directions. I went back to camp. He went over to eat some of his food, and he actually invited me to join him again at that point. And I was like, no, thank you. Like, go ahead.
And just in fairness to the show also, you know, as much as it's a depiction of a thing that happened, still a TV version of what happened. And sometimes it's just a matter of you want the best soundbite for what happened. And maybe it's not always the most perfectly accurate depiction of how everybody or just how somebody was feeling at a particular moment. So, yeah, look, it all works out.
I have no hard feelings about any of that. Like, I think that it made for a much more exciting outcome.
Look, this is the second act of the Adam Klein story. We have to beat you down before we bring you back up.
There you go.
So let's get into where things really start to pick up, because just as I've, you know, gone through this season with David and now with you, I really feel like up until this point in the game, this is like tiddlywinks up until the point we're about to get to now.
Yeah. Yeah. It picks up, you know, every single vote this entire season, except for the Rachel vote and the Taylor vote, were blindsides to the people that went home.
So you have this alliance basically of 9 people that are working together, and you have, you know, that the 6 Gen Xers, and then the 3 of you, of yourself and Zeke and Hannah from the Millennials. And there's going to be a big split here where the Gen X Civil War is about to come to a head. And so this is really going to turn into like a battle between Chris and with Jessica. Obviously, your team Jessica from your time with her at Tikali. So what's your perspective as these events are unfolding?
You said we had an alliance of 9. I would call that maybe
voting block of 9.
Voting block of 9. Yes. And I felt like I had an alliance of 6. I always felt like I had an alliance of 6. And so when we got our way the first vote, now there's 6 out of 12. If we can vote out one more of these guys, then we have the numbers. And so, you know, I knew that the next few, I wouldn't necessarily need to have my fingerprints all over, because the Jessica-Chris thing was definitely boiling up. It was going to happen probably sooner rather than later. And I knew that I had just played very hard in that first round. And if I'm going to make it to day 39, I need to take my foot off the pedal here and allow some of these events to unfold.
And they unfolded pretty much just how I anticipated they would.
Ultimately, it's Chris who's going to be the target on that side of the Gen X Civil War. Did you have any interactions with Chris?
Yeah, Chris wanted to go to the end with me.
Wow.
This will not be an uncommon theme. Like, there were a lot of people that wanted to go to the end with me. Like, I could name like half a dozen people that told me and genuinely like wanted to go to the end with me.
What do you attribute that to?
I was very underestimated throughout the game, and I think people thought that I only had a relationship with them. I had a very strong relationship with Brett, and we would kind of keep each other's. We weren't necessarily always on the same side, but I would try to keep his name out of my group's top of the target list, and he would do the same for me. And so I had a lot of these relationships that were sort of like across the aisle that people didn't necessarily know about, where people thought they were the only one of their group or whatever that was working with me. And then I had a number of these very public sort of blowups with people, like at Tribal Council with Taylor and Jay, where I knew and Taylor knew and Jay knew that we were all fighting to stay alive in the game. But to everybody else, this looks like they hate each other. And I think that that was helpful for my game in the long run. After that, where Taylor and Jay tried to throw me under the bus at Tribal Council, I think just about everyone at that point was like, all right, Adam's the kind of guy who's going to have so many enemies at the end that we can go all the way to the end with him.
Who was your final three? Did you have a set final three that you were trying to get to the end with?
I knew that my best chance of winning would be against Ken and Hannah from basically the beginning of the merge. I thought I had other options, you know, because it's very difficult to get to the end with the exact two people that you want to get there with.
Believe especially, me, I know.
Especially if other people have similar ideas about who they want to go with. So, you know, there were definitely that I saw a, you know, like a path to the end that included. Let's look at just my six, for example. Let's say theoretically we were the final six. Dave and Zeke are two obvious threats in our group of six. And like I did with Dave, I would have done the same with Zeke if he were still in the game. Just build him up, talk at every tribal council about how great he is, how great of a game he's playing, so that it's by the time it comes down to the final six, final five, whatever, it's very, very clear in everybody's minds, just from all of the repeated conversations that we have about it, who is the biggest threat in the game, and that if we let them get to the end, they're going to win. So you vote out Dave, you vote out Zeke, and then it would have been really interesting, I think, because I think Jessica and I had a very similar game and a very similar game plan, where we both kind of wanted to go to the end, all the way to the end with each other, because we really liked each other and worked really well together, and didn't necessarily want to like turn on each other. But I think both of us were unsure at the time that she went out who would be in the best position to win the game if we made it to the final four together. So if I had determined that I could beat her at that point, then I probably or maybe would have tried to go to the final three with her. But if I decided that she would beat me or that she might beat me, then I would try to vote her out at that point. It might be sort of like a Malcolm and Denise kind of thing in the Philippines, where they work really, really well together all the way to the final four. And then one of them is going to have to go in order for the other to win.
You said that in your group of six, you would have done to Zeke the same way you did to David, of just talk them up every tribal council. This is how great they're doing. This is the person that's really running things. Is it safe to say that you used flattery as a weapon? Instead of talking crap about people, you talked about how good people are and then ultimately let people make the decision for themselves that they had to get rid of this person?
Absolutely. And I think it had multiple benefits. One is that if they do end up getting voted out, they like me because I've been giving them not fake compliments, like genuine compliments throughout the entire process. And two, when it gets down to the final five or final six, they're obviously the biggest threats in the game. And then three, in order to get to that point, you help remove some of their options in the game by making it obvious that they're the biggest threat in the game. Because for someone like Brett, he was saying the whole time, like, we got to get rid of Dave. We got to get rid of Dave. We got to get rid of Dave. And so Dave never had the option of working with Brett or working with Sunday or working with Jay. Even, you know, they didn't want to work with Dave because they didn't want to go to the end with him. But I also didn't want to go to the end with him, but that didn't mean I couldn't work with him. Mm-hmm. You can take people who are big threats in the game towards the end. That's no problem, as long as they don't get all the way to the end and we almost mess that up with Dave.
I like that. I like that a lot. Look at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So going back to now, Chris is voted out in the Gen X Civil War. So this gets us to our really infamous moment in this season, going into this rock draw. And I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff that you want to get into with this.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was brutal. That was really tough. So, you know, in my perfect world, we like target Jay or Will or whatever, and we just keep trucking on. And this was terrible timing for our six to fall apart, because, you know, if we lose even just one person, now it's 5-5. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Hannah sort of claimed a bit of credit for turning Dave and Zeke against each other. And I do think that she was at least partially responsible for that, because she was really close with both of them and told both of them everything, including that the other was gunning for them. And so what that did was it sped up for both of them the rate at which they wanted to target the other person. I don't think either of them wanted to strike that quickly, but when someone is telling you they are voting for you tonight at Tribal Council, you have no choice but to respond in kind. If I had been more involved, and this is maybe one of those moments where I should have been more involved, then I may have, you know, if Zeke came to me and said, I'm worried Dave is coming after me, I may have said to Zeke, yeah, Dave doesn't trust you fully, but it doesn't matter, because, you know, I'm with you and we can get rid of him next. But first, in order to have the numbers, we need him for this vote to take out Jay or to take out Will or whatever.
Yeah.
Because right now we just wouldn't have the numbers to do it. And we'd lose the ability to then go after the Sundays and the Bretts and the Jays and the Wills of the world. But instead, it all came to a head.
So did you try to do any damage control? Because you talked about, your alliance of six, and David and Zeke are both a part of that. Or did you feel like that if you would have attempted to really try to mend fences, that the target could eventually end up on you?
No, I did try, but it needed cooperation with Hannah, because like I sat with Hannah and Zeke, and Zeke was like, Dave's coming after me. And Hannah was like, yep, he's coming after you. And I was like, no, like, you know, let's tackle this next. Like, first we need to focus on these guys. And it was two against one. Like, Hannah was saying, no, it's coming to a head right now. Like, this is when we like have to do it.
But why? If she was on the David side of things, why would she be telling Zeke he has to go for David?
She was playing both sides.
Yeah.
She was stoking the flames for both of them. And it's a good move at the right time, but the timing was just off.
Yeah.
So, you know, even when I sat one-on-one with Hannah, I'm like, can we get it off of both of them? Can we put it back on? Can we get them to vote together for one more round? And she said, absolutely not. It's beyond us now. It's like, there's nothing we can do. They are for sure gunning after each other.
Yeah. Heading into this eventual 5-5 vote, in your mind, do you have any idea that this is going to come to rocks?
Yeah, I'm worried that it is. And if I could go back, I would rally our troops like the Zeke side did to prep for this war, kind of, and tell everybody like we're threatening rocks. Like, if they don't flip, then we're going to Rocks and just get everybody ready for that. I think that was my instinct, was to project confidence and show the other side that I was willing to go to Rocks. But, you know, Jessica had like the reaction where she looks like she might flip. And so if you're Will, are you going to flip if you think that somebody else is going to flip? You know, he talked about this with Jordan, where he wasn't sure. He thought that we would flip. And the last thing he wants to do is unintentionally cause a rock draw and flip on his alliance by flipping when somebody else does. So we just needed to come in more unified and with a set plan on how to publicly, you know, present ourselves at Tribal Council.
I think they call that pulling a Connor.
Yeah. Right.
So, right. Did you have any potential notion to flip at the point that you guys get into this rock draw?
No. Flipping was not one of the options for me, but playing my idol was. You know, and I went into that Tribal Council actually planning on playing it, but in the end I just decided that we have one idol that's been played. You know, I thought at the time that there was maybe about a 50-50 chance that Ken was the one getting the votes. So if he was getting the votes, I definitely don't want to waste my idol. And then if he's not getting the votes, I thought there was about a 50-50 chance that someone would flip, whether it's from my side or their side. And then even if that doesn't happen, there's a 5 out of 6 chance that I'm not the one that pulls the bad rock. So all told, that's like a less than 5% chance that if I don't play the idol on myself, that I'm going to be the one going home. And to me, that just didn't seem worth it. I took the gamble, but it was incredibly terrifying.
Did you know that David had an idol?
Yeah, I didn't know 100%, but it everyone seemed to think that he did. And I had certainly heard the rumors that he did. And so, you know, I thought that an idol needed to be played that night so we would at least have a better shot. And my best guess as to who they were voting for, not just from the Tribal Council, but just from camp and my sense the whole day, which obviously was wrong. But my best guess was Ken. But I wanted Dave to play it for Ken so that I didn't have to. So when I told him to play it for Ken, he had already played it for himself. We knew that it wasn't going to be Dave getting the votes because they're not going to vote for the guy who has the idol. I pretty much knew that they weren't voting for me because of my relationship with Brett and Sunday. So it was between like Hannah and Jess and Ken. And I thought that I had like been the one to tell Dave to play it for Ken, that I had already sort of done enough. I had played an idol even without playing one, if that makes sense. Sort of pulled a Malcolm.
Mm-hmm. And so you stick your hand into the bag of rocks. What is that like as a Survivor fan and a Super Duper fan getting to this point? Because I couldn't imagine doing it.
Yeah, I took like a little screenshot of this and you can see my face like right before I open my palm. And I've been showing people that picture and just saying like, this is what fear looks like. I had like all of my Survivor life and much of my actual life like flash before my eyes in that moment. And I was already apologizing to my family and whoever was, I had a very strong suspicion that the loved one's visit was coming up because it was already like day 30 or 31 or something. And so I was like, oh, the loved one's visit is coming. Maybe they're even here. And like, oh God, what am I doing? And I have an eye. I'm going to go home with an idol in my pocket. Like, this is ridiculous. It was, yeah, you can't put into words how scary that is.
Mm-hmm. And then to go out of the game on a rock draw, would you have been able to come away from the game? Like, we know how devastated Jessica was. But, you know, back when it happened to Pascal, I feel like it was a harder thing to live with, but I do feel like in some ways it is a bit of a hero's exit of, you know, I boldly stuck my hand into the bag of rocks. It didn't come up my way, but que sera, sera.
I think it's the worst way to go out in Survivor, personally.
It would be tough for me. I got to be honest.
I would be absolutely devastated. And I was devastated just for Jessica. It wasn't even me, and it was the hardest Tribal Council of the entire season for me. Because, you know, I was almost crying. Like, it was really, really hard because I just knew how it would feel if it were me. And I would not, this is one of those moments where being a part of Survivor history did not interest me.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like, that's what a cool way to go out. Like, no way, no way. And I knew that, you know, it probably would end up reflecting in like what you see on TV, that you wouldn't see nearly as much of Jessica as you would otherwise, because there's no gameplay explanation as to why she went home. You know what I mean? Most people, their narrative is based around the sense that, like, at some point something goes wrong or some relationships don't work out. But for her, it was just The Rock, and there's no way to sort of tell that story in a super interesting way except for at that tribal council.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you survive The Rock draw, and then you move on. And so, how desperate are you feeling at this point? Because now you are down in the numbers.
So this is where my relationship with Brett and Sunday is going to be really, really useful, because, you know, we had even had a conversation before The Rock draw. Like, look, we may not be on the same side tonight, like, but when, no matter what happens, I'm with you tomorrow, sort of thing. Like, we can still work together, even if we're not on the same side tonight. Which is, an interesting conversation that probably doesn't happen all that often in Survivor. But that's just, I guess, the way I played and the way our season was. And so I wasn't concerned that I would be the next to go if that five stuck together. I did think that they would protect me and that there would still be a way. But I was like, I'm going to have to play from the bottom from here on out,
mm-hmm.
Which is easier from when there's 9 people left than from when there's 13, but still very, very, very difficult.
Slightly, right.
The good news was that I had my idol. So my plan A, my plan B, if no one was going to flip, would be to try to figure out who they were voting for and use my idol correctly and even up the numbers. Because I thought that our 4 was much tighter than any 4 that would be left if we did a successful idol play on their side. And I would have been willing to, threaten Rocks again if it came down to it. But I didn't think that it would, because I didn't think that 4 would stick together. So this is something that you didn't see at all on the show. It made it look like Will went to Dave and in the secret scene to Hannah about the pendulum strategy.
Yes.
But this was actually something that he came to me about. And he talked about this on his happy hour with Jordan. We had basically rebuilt a bond to the point that he was open to working with me, even after I gunned directly for him at the first vote of the merge. After that, I told him exactly why I did it, which was, you know, that he had lied about me to Taylor, which again is an argument based in honesty, and that, you know, lies are unacceptable. And we then, you know, voted together a few times from then on out. And then he decided that he wanted to go to the end with me, which is, like I said, a pretty common refrain that I kept hearing from people,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, means that they think that they would beat me, but. And some of them definitely would have, but some of them, you know, including Ken and Hannah, wanted to go to the end with me and a few other people that I think I would have beaten in the end. Anyway, so Will comes to me with this idea with the pendulum strategy. I say, I love it. Obviously, he wants to do it with me and Hannah and take out Zeke and then Dave and then Jay and go back and forth, voting out all the biggest threats in the game until it's only the three of us left, or until, you know, there are so few people left in the game that the three of us are the majority. And I tell him I love the idea. It's awesome. And then, you know, Ken's whole test comes up.
Mm-hmm. Well, could we just go back to the pendulum strategy? Now,
sure.
Were you really on board with the pendulum strategy? Because it seems to be at odds with what your eventual strategy is going to be. Will wants to take out all of the threats, boom, 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 all in a row. You want to keep all the threats around until the end and then take them out, boom, boom, boom.
I was never on board with the pendulum strategy.
Okay.
But Will was absolutely my ticket to getting out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where all of the truths that I have been telling throughout the entire game, all of my brutal honesty, every single time where I have told someone, this is exactly what I was thinking and this is why I did it, comes to be of benefit, because Will sees me as a very straightforward player. And I it was by design. I wanted people to think that about me, so that when I tell him that I love this idea and I want to go to the end with him, I'm basically just repeating back what he wants to hear from me, with no intention of actually doing it. I know that this is not a good move for him. If he does this, if he flips on his side, then it's 4-4 again, as far as I see it, because I want my four to stay in the game, including Dave, because I want him to go a little bit farther at least. And then if Will flips, then there's four on the other side, but not really, because they'll be pissed at Will.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next vote, again, it would just be which of the four is going to be the easiest to vote out. And I knew that the answer would be Will.
Okay.
So I didn't want a gun for Will because he flipped or whatever. I just gunned for Will because I knew that that's the name that Brett and Sunday would go for, because they would be pissed that he flipped.
Okay, so obviously you want Will to go forward with the pendulum strategy. There's the whole blow up with Ken. Do you want to talk about that from your perspective at all?
Yeah, I mean, we had talked, the five of us, including Will, and Ken, you know, was heard the plan that Will's going to flip to our side and we're going to vote out Zeke and they're not going to see it coming. Boom, done. You know, and I will never totally understand why Ken did what he did, except for that.
It was a test.
Here's what I really think it was, is that Ken has a hard time understanding why anyone would want to vote him out. Mm-hmm. Because Ken was a great provider. Ken fished a lot and he cooked every day and, you know, he was great around camp. And to him, that makes someone the most deserving survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And people should respect that. And while we absolutely respected it as human beings, in the context of the game, it's not a reason to keep somebody in the game. I mean, this was to the point where, like, something happened at Takali that sort of blew my mind a little bit, which was after the vote where we voted out Figgy, you know, I think it was like the next morning or something, Ken says to me, you know, like, you owe us one. We saved your butt there. Like, I hope you meant what you said, that you'll always stick by us or something like that.
Hmm.
And I turned to Jessica, who was there, and I'm like, wait, Ken, like, you got two votes last night. Like, huh? Yeah. What do you mean? And he believed that they had saved me. Well, he was like, no, but Taylor and Figgy came to me and said that they wanted to vote you out.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I know, Ken, but they lied to you, right? Like,
right.
They didn't vote with you. Like, they wanted to vote you out, and mm-hmm. I voted with you guys. So, and I went into confessional. I was like, I cannot believe what I'm hearing right now. Like, he actually genuinely believes that he prevented me from going home at tribal council last night.
But the crazy thing is, it doesn't matter what the actual truth is. It only matters what his perception of the events are.
Yeah.
You know?
And Jessica and I had a laugh over it, and she's like, don't worry about it. Like, it's not a big deal. But he couldn't, you know, believe that he was ever in danger. And so when he heard that they were going to vote for him, I think it really like struck him. And as the person he is, he just couldn't help it but go to them and be like, yo, like, why would you vote me out?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand. And I don't think he realized that would basically be the same kind of betrayal to Will that it was for Jessica. That it was for him when Jessica went to Lucy at the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the exact same thing that he, like, it would have been funny if Will had said, like, so am I just supposed to, or if Ken had said, so am I just supposed to, like, believe what you tell me without, mm-hmm. like, checking? And Will's just like, yes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was, you know, mind blowing to, but, you know, me and Dave and Hannah, and I had to go into damage control. And, you know, everyone's going into damage control because the other side's trying to get Will back. They have this big conversation on the beach, and they're all talking to Will, like, all at once, which is probably overwhelming for Will. And I'm sitting up there like, do I let this happen? Do I not let this happen? Should I try to join in? And eventually they've been talking for like 10 minutes. I'm like, all right, enough's enough. And so I walk down to the beach and I'm about to go join the conversation, and they all stop and they turn at me and they're like, can you not? Like, can you give us a moment? And I just stood there like looking at them like, and it was the funniest thing. It was like 15 seconds of us just like staring at each other. And eventually I was like, okay. And I walked back, but it was like, we were able to, even at the time, like, laugh about that. But eventually I found an opportunity to talk to Will one-on-one. He was livid at Ken. And I said, look, yeah, like, Ken's an idiot. Like, I'm very sorry about all of that, but the pendulum strategy, like, your idea is still good. This can still work. Like, it doesn't change the fact that the strategy still makes sense. So, you know, and I reiterated that I was with him on this. And so he said, okay. Then we called Hannah over and we're like, we still good with this? And she said, yep. And that was it. And he flipped back to our side in that moment. So I walked into tribal council feeling very confident that Will would be on our side.
Now, I just want to back up a little bit because there's a lot of other important things going on at this period in the game, because this is also when the loved ones visit happens as well. And of course, that's a, you know, huge iconic moment in the season, when there's so much talk about what's going to happen with the reward steal. What are you going to do? You get a chance to see your brother. You tell the group, hey, I have this reward steal. I'm not going to be using it today. Could you just take us through your thought process and whether that was there was strategic elements to that, or that was just you wanted to put everybody else at ease just from a, you know, human to human standpoint? So what was the intention?
It was absolutely both.
Yeah.
It was a very human moment, but I also would not do anything that would jeopardize the reason why I was out there, which was to get to the end and win. That's what my family sent me out to do. So it was absolutely both. And I think that's how people should play the game of Survivor. I think you should do what's in your character. I think you should be yourself. But I think you should think about how, you know, the decisions that you make may impact, you know, your ability to do well in the game. And this was the solution that I came up with that would give me the best chance of actually getting to go on this reward without doing what I knew I couldn't do, which was play it, even though I badly, badly wanted to, because it would totally, to steal a loved one's visit, even if, so what I had been saying up until this point about how I would play the advantage if I were to play it, whether it be at the loved one's visit or otherwise, was that I would only steal it from one of the challenges where someone wins and then gets to pick people to go along with them. Like, I would never steal it a team challenge because every person on that team earned it, right? Mm-hmm. And then my first choice of who would come with me would be the person that won. Mm-hmm. And then whatever choices I had left would be the choices of the person that won. So basically, I would be taking away one spot of the number of people that you get to choose. That's how I told the tribe that I would play it, mm-hmm. if I were to play it. So instead of Jay getting to pick three people, if I had played it, I would have said, I'm playing this, Jay's coming, and Jay, you pick two more instead of three.
Okay.
And I thought that that would be a way of getting to play it without having too much blowback. But even that idea for the loved ones visit was people were heavily cautioning me against that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And saying like that, you know, it still might feel like stealing it.
Yeah.
Whereas to me, if it were me, I would understand. But a lot of people are way more, you know, emotional in their thinking than I am, and would still think of it as a steal. So based off the impressions I was getting from how other people would react if I were to do that, I realized I could not do that, even with all those caveats. But I was like, if I decide openly and publicly not to play it, I could earn enough goodwill in that moment so that whoever wins brings me on it. Because okay. I really felt like I needed, I still don't know what I would have done if I hadn't been chosen. Like, I don't know that I could have just let my brother walk away without getting information. But I was confident, I was so confident that it would work that I did it. And it was scary.
Jay ends up winning the challenge, and he picks, I think, Will first, then Sunday, and then the third person he picks ultimately is you. And you guys have this really, you know, interesting relationship on the show. Now, at that point, did he know about your mom yet? I know that you guys have the scene in the hammock, but I don't remember if that was before this or after this.
No, he did not. He didn't know. And this was not one of those moments where they cut it to make it more dramatic. Like, he absolutely chose Will first and chose Sunday second and chose me with his last pick. So it was like, it was down to the wire. I think even though he didn't know he knew there was something, right? Like, he has, health issues of his own in his family with his mom. And I think he could just like see in my eyes and in my voice when I was talking about not using it, how badly I needed it. Mm-hmm. Just as, you know, as a human being. And we had already this relationship where we were always on the verge of best friends and worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we were tight allies at the beginning of the game. We never voted together. Not once in the course of the entire game, except for when he threw a vote on Taylor, which I don't really count. We never voted together, and yet we had this incredible bond and somehow got to the final six together, even though we never voted together. And really, like, it was just the strangest thing. I think some part of him knew that he needed to do that. I don't know if I can describe it, but I think he just knew.
So you get to talk with your brother, and, you know, please forgive me if I'm getting anything wrong here, but he tells you that the treatment that your mom is undergoing isn't going well. It's not taking, and they're taking her off of, is it chemo? Do I have all of the terms right?
Yeah, it was a chemo with another pill called the MEK inhibitor.
And so obviously, you know, you react to this bad news. But how did you hide this from the other players after you learned this? How did you let it not affect you a couple hours later when you're back at camp?
Because I didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are capable of much more than they think they are. And I couldn't. My whole game was based on this idea that I was beatable at the end. That people wanted to take me to the end. And I hid more than just, you know, like my family stuff. Like, people knew that I was a fan, that I like liked the show, but I never talked about your podcast or playing online or hosting my own games or any little, you know, bit of trivia about Survivor or any of that stuff. I locked that all down, and I didn't want to stand out in any exceptional way. And I think with something like this, there is such a perceived threat that sympathy votes or anything like that help you at the end, when in reality, I really don't think it makes an ounce of a difference, because every single season of Survivor, the jury votes for the person that they want to win the most,
mm-hmm.
not who needs the money the most, not who, you know, they feel bad for, but the person that they want to represent their season. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's just the person they like the most.
Yeah.
Other times maybe they didn't like love them as a person, but they respect them. But those are the two biggest elements of how they vote in the end. But there's this idea, and I think it's going to be even, and I said this to you on the red carpet, I think it's going to be even worse now moving forward, where people think, oh, anyone who has a story like that, they're going to get votes at the end. But that's not why Jeremy won. You know, right. That's not why I won. We happen to have these stories on top of the games that we played, but we won based on the relationships that we made with the members of the jury and the way that we conducted ourselves throughout the course of the game.
Right.
But there's, again, that perception, and I didn't want that to be a perceived threat when it doesn't have any bearing on the game itself.
And to add to that, if somebody is in the final tribal council and they're not a person that was liked the whole way through, and they bring up, you know, some sort of a, you know, life event or something that they've been hiding the whole season, it's still not going to go over with the jury, that they'll figure out some way, oh, this person was just trying to, you know, this really rubs me the wrong way, the way that they brought this thing up at the end. And it won't change anybody's mind. And just like off the top of my head, I know that Sugar talked about her dad quite a bit during Gabon, and she's somebody who doesn't end up with votes in the final. So it's not necessarily that there is a line that you
can
draw.
And gets trashed for it by the jury.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So the goodwill has to be there. It's not just that people are going to just give charity to a person because they have some life event happening.
Yeah. And look, and if they were going to vote based on like needing the money or whatever, I wasn't asking for money for to fund the chemo treatments or whatever. It was it was about the joy of my family getting to watch and see me play. And, you know, Ken was asking for the money to help support his daughter. Like, that was an active argument at tribal council, you know. So it's not about that.
Yeah. Also, before you guys vote here, you also are going to have your immunity win.
Yeah.
How about that?
That was that. I bought my club and handles in the auction. So that my friends can like try it out and see if they can like beat my time.
So in the auction that the one they do after the season of props from the show. Right.
Right. Exactly. And, I actually, I think that I won that challenge, not because I was the strongest at like grip strength or whatever, but because I think I figured out the best way to do it that other people just didn't figure out. There was everyone else was just pulling straight out, and I pulled the bottom and pushed at the top, and it sort of locked it into place. So I think I could have gone for a while there.
Is that something that you had practiced before?
No, but before these challenges, you get about probably like 2 minutes to sort of play around with it and test it out, so you can get the hang of it so people don't drop in like the first 2 seconds of the challenge.
Right.
And so I used that time to try to figure out if there was a better way to do it.
At that tribal council now, Will is going to flip at your side, but you also play the idol and use it to try to protect Hannah. We will find out that Hannah would not have gone home because of these votes. And this was a rather confusing episode. I think that we were, you know, partway through the know-it-alls before I even realized that you had not protected Hannah from going home with your idol play. But it certainly did feel that way in the way that it was presented on the episode. So could you just take us through that decision to play the idol for Hannah?
Yeah, just before I do that, just in terms of the perception, like people are like, oh yeah, Adam totally usurped Will's move there. And that was, you know, even though he didn't need to, like he totally like took the credit for that. And it was so strange for me because
No,
I'm sorry, the fans. It was so strange for me because I thought that that was I made a huge mistake by playing the idol, and the show is giving me credit for one of my mistakes, or at least the audience is, when the real thing that I did was flip Will or give him what he needed in order for him to flip. So that's what I was proud of.
Yeah.
I was proud that Will like voted that way and that I was an instrumental part of that. And that part was totally and completely cut out of the episode. And I was getting credit for something I had no pride over, which was wasting my idol. So yeah, the whole like story of my win or whatever was so strange to me.
So here's what I don't understand about all of this. So you have this conversation with Will, you feel like you get him voting your way. Obviously you feel good about this. Will has told the story of that when he votes, he writes 6 pen strokes down on the paper in order to fake a Hannah vote. But why is he doing that if he is working with you? Is he's trying to flush your idol, or he's trying to just create more confusion?
Well, he doesn't know that I have an idol. But yeah, just for anyone who's not aware of what Rob's talking about, Will goes into the voting booth, he writes Zeke's name down, and then in the air, without putting pen to parchment, he makes it obvious that he's writing, or he's actually pretending to write, an A and an H. So it looks like 6 letters with an A and an H at the end. And Dave and Hannah see that and they say, oh, he just wrote down Hannah's name. Like, Hannah's going home. Hannah's like, yeah, it's me. He just wrote my name down. Like, she starts grabbing her bags, whatever. And I'm like, really? Like, I was so sure that he was with us. Like, really? Are you sure? And they're like, 100% sure. Will just wrote down Hannah's name. And so that's when I decide to play the idol. Now, in terms of why Will did that, I mean, you'd have to ask him for his answer, but my impression of why he would do that, why it is a good move, is because if our side has an idol, he doesn't know that I have one, but if Dave has one, who he's going to try to get rid of next, and Dave was going to be the most likely person to have one, is in terms of what everybody thought, that he could flush an idol from our side. And if the other side has an idol, he doesn't want them to play it on Zeke, and he wants them to feel comfortable. So if they see him writing down Hannah, then they're not going to play an idol when they need to.
Got it. So he wasn't trying to specifically target you or your idol. All right.
He didn't know about it. He had no idea no one had any idea whatsoever that I had an idol except for Jessica, and she was already out of the game.
Did you know that the crotch idol was going to be a thing?
I didn't expect the crotch idol to be a thing because I did not plan to play it at that tribal council. and no one would have been ever the wiser that idol was in my crotch, because I went to that tribe. I almost didn't even bring it because I wasn't going to bring a bag, and I didn't have a place to put it. I didn't want to put it in my pocket because I thought people would see, you know, the bulge in my pocket or whatever. So, I was at the last minute, I was like, I'll just take it just in case. And I was wearing that like tight underwear. So I was like, I don't think anyone will like necessarily like notice this, or, you know, they're not going to be like staring at my crotch. So, I decided to just put it in there, and then I still wasn't planning on playing it until right before I did, when Dave and Hannah were sure that Will had just voted for Hannah.
And what was the fallout then after you guys got back to camp? Were you upset with Will for what he did? Were people upset with you for playing the idol?
No, I was very thankful for Will. I definitely like thanked him for voting with us, and we talked about, I don't know if we did that night, but obviously the next day we talked about voting out Dave next. That was his plan. And at the same time, I knew that Brett and Sunday were going to be pissed. So I went to bed feeling very upset that I had played my idol, but very good about how the votes had gone. And the first thing the next morning, I was up before dawn looking for another idol.
All right. Well, here's now when Will is going to be the person to go home. Did you know from that point on that Will was going to be the target for this vote, or did it turn out to that's just how it ended up going down after it could have gone a number of different ways?
I pretty much knew that Will was going to be the target as soon, you know, as soon as I realized he was going to vote with us, I realized that he would probably be the next target because he would be the one that his side would be willing to flip on.
Yeah.
I was just listening to a podcast where Brett's like, you know, it was my and Sunday's idea to go after Will. And that was great for me. Like, I wanted them to, like, come to me with the idea. And I knew that they would because they would be pissed at him. So, you know, that was, you know, I didn't need to throw Will's name out there. I just had a conversation with Brett and Sunday. And I was like, I'm willing to get rid of Dave, but not this vote. Who do you guys want to get rid of? And if it's not going to be Dave, who else are they going to say? Will.
So at that point, when you started talking with Brett and Sunday, I was watching and I was saying, oh, this is great for Adam. Now he could pick up these two. They were with Chris. They were with Zeke. Now they could be with Adam. And I feel like that Adam looks really good in this final three with Brett and Sunday.
So, yeah, one of my potential. So, like I said, you know, I wanted to go to the end with Ken and Hannah, but I had other potential. You know, I wanted to look at other potential paths. And so one of the potential paths was, you know, after we vote out Will, then my plan to ensure that Jay had to play his idol was to put votes on him, knowing that Brett, Sunday, and Jay would vote for Dave. So either Dave or Jay go home there, and then the other goes home after that. And that leaves us with a final five of me, Brett, and Sunday, and Ken and Hannah. And I felt confident enough that even though I believed that I would be the biggest threat in that final five, that the people that I would have gone there with were so, like, including Ken and Hannah, were convinced enough that I wasn't going to beat them, that they would go to the end with me. And that they would still vote off Brett and Sunday before turning on me. Now, it's totally possible that once we get down to that five, the perception shifts and they realize that I'm a threat and decide to target me. And I could have ended up going out in fifth place or fourth place or whatever. But I saw that as a potential path forward. And I do think that I was under the radar enough in terms of threat level that there was a very good chance that they still go to the final three with me, even if Brett and Sunday are in the final five.
So do you have any sort of a conversation with Will in terms of letting him know, or are you just willing to let him just go into a blindside?
No, Will was definitely blindsided. And I knew that Will would be the kind of player that would respect a move like that.
Yeah, he didn't care. He was happy.
He was a great sport about it. He really was. I was very impressed. And he was playing out there the entire time. You didn't see it all on the show, but he knew what was going on and had a plan for everything. So he was definitely a gamer, and I knew that he respected that above all else.
So then in the second part of this, this was a double boot episode, we see where Sunday ends up going out. And this was one where Steven and I really disagreed with that decision or that call from your part. We talked about this a little bit on the red carpet, but the decision to get rid of Sunday, I mean, in terms of like hearing you retell the story of the season, it just seems like the biggest problem, and it's easier to do when you're on the whiteboard and it's like, oh, okay, just go to the end with this person. It seems like that with the people that you're working with, that's going to be a tough tightrope to walk to try to, you know, switch to working with Brett and Sunday.
Well, so here's the thing is it wasn't that we were voting out Dave. It was that I needed to make sure that if and when Jay played his idol, that it wasn't going to fall back on me. Because that idol was the scariest thing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you know, like Dave talked about with you, you know, why don't we split the votes between Jay and Brett? And I was thinking out loud, like, that never was possible. Like, the votes weren't there to do that. The only reason we could split the votes was because Brett and Sunday and Jay were all wanted to vote out Dave. So that was just where they wanted to put the votes. And I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be on me or Hannah or Ken. So, you know, it literally would not have been possible to put four votes on Jay and three votes on Brett or Sunday, because that would have required Jay and one of Bread or Sunday to vote for the other person. So I didn't understand that at all. So the only option here is either vote for Jay and have their votes go on Dave, and maybe Dave goes home, or you can't vote for Jay. Mm-hmm. And then you have to put four votes on someone else, which is what we ended up going with. But the huge danger there is that if Jay doesn't play his idol, then you're in a real bad spot.
Mm-hmm.
So the most important thing of that vote was that Jay played his idol or went home with the idol in his pocket, right? But he could not come back to camp the next day with an idol in his pocket.
Yeah.
So that's everything that I did in that round was based on the idea that Jay and an idol still in the game at final six cannot happen.
So you almost didn't even care who went home.
I didn't. But I didn't want Ken to go home. I didn't want Hannah to go home, and I didn't want me to go home. And so if my side is going to take a hit, then it has to be Dave. Mm-hmm. And remember, I still think at the time that this final five of me, Brett, Sunday, Hannah, and Ken is still a winning final five for me, even though I may be the biggest threat in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people in the game didn't necessarily see it that way. And as long as I had Hannah and Ken convinced, as long as they were convinced that they would beat me, it didn't really matter who was there in the final five.
How concerned were you, though, that you were potentially four in that grouping where potentially David and Ken and Hannah were going to be the final three?
Well, it wouldn't have mattered if that's part of the reason why part of my plan was that Jay plays his idol and Dave goes home, and then that's not an issue. But if it came down to it, I was not confident that Ken would ever flip on Dave, but I knew that Hannah would. Hannah recognized that she could not beat Dave. She said it over and over again, just as often as I did. Not to Dave. She was lying to Dave, saying, you know, I want to go to the end with you. But to me, she recognized that she couldn't beat Dave. The questionable call in my mind was putting the power in Ken's hands at the final four when we could have just done it, just the two of us with Brett at the final five.
Yeah. Okay. So after Sunday goes home, you guys get to the final six. You know, the big decision point for you here is Jay uses your reward steal and he takes away the reward that David won after he gets immunity. He takes you guys to a dinner and you guys talk some business. And Jay has this idea of going to the final three with you and David. And so David is up for it, seemingly. He's certainly willing to consider it. But you basically say point blank, you're not that interested.
Yeah, that would have been great for Jay and Dave because they would have had a shot in a final three of me, Jay and Dave. But I was never going to go for that. So, you know, and honestly, Dave wasn't either. And he was just pretending that he was.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those examples where I was being straightforward and everyone else was just lying.
Mm-hmm.
Jay was always going to go home. No, I had a conversation with Dave where we sat down and we were like, so, and Dave was like, yeah, no way. And I was like, yeah, no way. So, and that was the whole conversation. We're like, all right, that's settled. And, you know, Hannah was like, I could be on board. She was never. No, Jay was always going to go home in that situation. And I was the only one that was willing to tell him that. There's one just clip of us hugging, which is in a different place than the conversation that you saw on the show, because we had a couple conversations throughout the day. And the one of us hugging at the end is basically after I told him, like, you know, I'm writing your name down. And I was like, and if you, like, go, you know, look for an idol, like, I'm chasing you through the jungle. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I won't do that. And then we're like walking back to camp and he takes off and he goes flying. He runs into the jungle and I shout to everybody else, like, guys, Jay's on the loose. And we have like a whole, it was the funniest thing. Like, we're all just chasing after Jay. And as Dave told you, he left his, like, the paints that he used to make the fake idol, like,
only partially buried. Mm-hmm. And so we found that and we thought like maybe it was a clue or something. And so we start digging and he's pushing me and I'm pushing him and we're laughing the whole time. Like we know this is like very serious. Like if there's an idol here, like I don't want him to have it and he doesn't want me to have it. But it's also hilarious that we're like actually running after each other in the jungle. And, you know, that was just our relationship. Like we had just hugged it out. Like he was like, all right, you know, I guess that's it. And the craziest part about it is that this whole time, he thinks he has an idol.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he thinks he already has an idol.
So what is he going for? So, is he trying to dupe you?
No, he's just having fun. This is just how Jay, like, is in life. Like, he just wants to see me squirm. Because I've been seeing him squirm. You know, we were making each other sweat. Like, he would make me nervous, and then I would make him nervous, and we would never actually, like, vote each other out. And, you know, when I told him that I was going to vote for him, he's like, all right, will you at least do one thing? Will you put a smiley face inside of a heart when you write my name down? And I was like, sure, Jay, like, I'll do that for you. So I do it. And then right before he plays his fake idol, which he thinks is a real idol, he turns to me. He's like, did you put the smiley face with the heart as he's reaching into his bag? And I'm like, oh God, yes, mm-hmm. I did. This is how I go home. Mm-hmm. I was like, so, and again, he was just having fun, like trying to make me sweat, making me think that he had voted for me when he had actually voted for Ken. So we just did that to each other. It was ridiculous.
Have you done the mental exercise of if it's you and Jay and David in the final three, how it shakes out?
Yeah, I don't think I get a vote.
Really?
I don't think so. I mean, look, the only way that happens is if I'm foolish enough to let it happen. So maybe in a vacuum, I get some votes. But the only way that happens is if I decided to go to the end with them. And that's like, I would deserve to get no votes
mm-hmm.
for that reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like when someone's such a visible threat, like Dave, even if you played a better game in reality, if the narrative of the whole season, and if you have been saying that he's playing a better game, which I said over and over and over again, I didn't necessarily believe it, but that's what I was saying. If I'm saying that, I have no argument at Final Tribal Council.
Right.
Why you deserve to lose if you go to the end with the person who you claim is the best player in the game.
I agree. I think the things that, not that necessarily that you get no votes, but I'm saying that the things you do to get to that position and how you get there are points on your resume that end up being in your favor, to use the favorite Will term of the Survivor jury. I think that that's really important in terms of how it looks on getting there as well.
Look, I think the jury wanted to, I think there were a number of jury members that were rooting for me to get to the end, but if I got there with Dave, even if they wanted to vote for me, they would have had to vote for Dave, because anyone who gets to the final three after being a target from the final 10 on and having everyone say at every single tribal council that they're the biggest threat in the game, if that person gets to the end, you have to give them $1 million. You have to.
Okay. So let's talk about the final five that you were referencing earlier. And now this is where it is looking like you are in some trouble. David says, like, hey, if we're going to vote out Adam anyway at four, why not vote him out at five? And so you catch wind of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hannah and Brett both tell me.
Okay. And so you go out and you look for the idol. Now, you said you found a clue first.
Yeah. So, well, the order of operations there is a little off. I didn't look for an idol because I felt that I was in jeopardy. I looked for an idol to make sure that Dave did not find it.
Okay.
Because one, I couldn't fathom the possibility that Hannah wouldn't vote out Dave. And then two, I will still maintain that I was never in danger at the final five because Hannah would have never voted me out. I was Hannah's ticket to $1 million in her mind. In her mind at the time, she only beats me and Ken. So she is trying to get to the exact same final three as I am. So she never was going to vote me out in that scenario. Dave and Ken might have shot two votes my way if she didn't tell them that I had an idol, but Hannah was never going to go along with that. So I find the idol so that Dave doesn't. And then, you know,
I make the mistake, obviously, in retrospect, of telling Hannah that I found it. The reason why I did that and what I was thinking at the time was, one, we both have the same ideal final three. And for me to get to a final three of me, Hannah, and Ken, Dave is the obvious target right here because he's more likely to win immunity and more likely to beat us in the end. Mm-hmm. So I figured that Hannah would have the same logic. And I didn't just figure it. She said it to me in the same way that morning. She was like, we cannot beat Dave. We need to vote him out tonight. It was her idea, right? Just as much as it was my idea. But, and in terms of telling her, I was worried, even though I thought that at the time that her and Ken wanted to go to the end with me, perceptions can constantly shift and change in the game. And I had already found an idol and played it without telling her. I thought that if I did it again, it would give me all of the credit for sending Dave home, and it could open her eyes to the fact that I would beat her in the end, and she might want to vote me out at the final four. So I wanted this to feel like as much her move as it was mine to get rid of Dave. I wanted her to know about the idol so that when Dave went home, she could, in her mind, claim, you know, equal credit for getting him out. That it wasn't like she was blindsided and it was just Adam's move. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is by telling her, she saw that it might give, I think this is my interpretation of it, is she saw that I might get credit for it. And she wanted to be the one to be responsible for Dave going home.
She was blocking your move.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the whole thing about like, oh, well, she's talked a lot about like needing Ken to trust her doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because we wouldn't have needed Ken's vote if we had voted Dave out at the final five.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we only needed Ken's vote because we allowed Dave to get to the final four. So, you know, I will never be able to be convinced that Hannah made the right decision there for either her game in reality or her game as she saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But I messed up by telling her about the idol. And if I hadn't told her about the idol, it would have gone, you know, according to plan.
Okay. So you guys get down to the final four now. The final four that you had been talking about for quite some time. Maybe not exactly the path that you guys predicted how it would go, but now here you all are, and your only objective is to get David out and you get the final three that you want. It comes down to Hannah and Ken in that final immunity challenge, and do you have a horse in the race? Are you hoping that Hannah wins it, or are you hoping that Ken wins it, because that would be a point for Hannah in the eyes of the jury?
Yeah, and just to go back to the first thing you said, this was not the final four that I anticipated, or that I was working towards. I did not want Dave that close to
you
the
You wanted
end.
Him out at five.
Yeah, my perfect final four was me, Hannah, Brett, and Ken. And the reason why is because Brett was seen as a massive jury threat in the eyes, especially of Hannah and Ken, and would have been the clear vote out at final four, not only because they thought he was a jury threat, but also because they weren't friends with him at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was no emotional reason to keep him in, and no strategic reason that they would want to keep him in. He also hasn't, you know, won challenges. So he's more likely that we'll be able to win, beat him in a challenge of the final four than against Dave. And if he does win, he wants to go to the end with me, potentially. I mean, he may have tried to vote me out at final four. It's tough to say if he had won, but he still believes that he would have beaten me in a final three. Mm-hmm. So he definitely believed it at the time. I happen to disagree with that. I think I beat him in a final three. I think he gets the votes of Chris, Sunday, and Zeke, but I believe that I probably get the rest. But, you know, they all three of them would have wanted to go to the end with me and vote out Brett, who they thought was a bigger threat. Anyway, it doesn't work out like that. So we're at the final four. We're at that challenge. My only goal in that challenge is to make sure that Dave doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
That is it. Because I'm worried that because
two things need to happen. Now that we have not gotten rid of Dave, Dave needs to not win immunity and Ken needs to turn on Dave. If both of those things don't happen, then I would lose the game almost assuredly. Because even if I won immunity, if Ken was not willing to flip on Dave, he votes out. He votes for Hannah. Hannah and I vote for Dave. Now Hannah and Dave have to go to a fire making contest. And there was, you know, I mean, maybe Hannah could have pulled out a major upset. Highly unlikely. Whereas if Hannah wins and Ken's not willing to turn, at least I'm going to fire with Dave. And I think I have at least a better shot than Hannah would. I would still probably lose, though. But you can see why winning immunity myself isn't necessarily the most important thing here. It's just Dave not winning and then Ken voting out Dave.
So let's get into your conversations with Ken. How much groundwork did you lay with Ken to get to this point?
I had laid very little groundwork with Ken besides at tribal council in terms of pointing out how big of a threat Dave was, because I never anticipated that we would need Ken's vote to do it. But at every tribal council, and especially when Brett was voted out, I pointed at the jury. I'm like pointing them out, like their reaction, like, look at that. They're laughing. Like they, and every time Dave spoke, he said, you know, I'm not that big of a threat. And I would say, look at the jury. They're literally laughing. Like they can't contain themselves because they know how ridiculous it is. And so I think that made a difference. It definitely made a difference in the jury's mind because they saw that I recognized the threat that Dave was, and they didn't necessarily see that Hannah and Ken, I think Ken didn't recognize it until the very end, but Hannah certainly did, and they didn't see that Hannah recognized that because she didn't talk about it. So they thought she didn't realize that he was such a big threat, and they especially thought that when she didn't vote him out at the final five. So, but then immediately after that tribal council, when Brett goes home, I have a long conversation with Ken where I realize, you know, because I realize I'm now going to need his vote to vote out Dave. And we talk about a lot, and it's far more than strategic. And I even told him about my mom at this point, partly because, you know, in addition to just opening up to him as a friend, I wanted him to know that I was like a good person too, you know, like, cause that's Ken, like I'm playing for more than myself too. Like right. You're playing for your daughter and I'm also playing for something. And the only thing standing in the way of us being successful at that, of bringing it home for our families is Dave, who is going to beat us, you know, and you saw the jury's reactions tonight. And so, you know, that, interestingly got cut out of the broadcast that I even spoke with Ken, which made it look like the credit that I was given by Chris was totally undue. And while I do not take full credit, because that was Ken needed to come to that conclusion that he couldn't beat Dave in order to make that move. It ultimately didn't matter because while he understood that he couldn't beat Dave, He had underestimated me the entire time and put himself in a position where ultimately it wouldn't matter for him.
I want to get to the final three in the final tribal council. And you did a really great job in the final tribal council. I thought you really addressed any concerns that the jury had. Who were you really worried about was going to come after you at that final tribal council?
Well, I think we were all worried about Zeke just because he had such... He was the only person on the jury that had like total stone face the entire time. Mm-hmm. Like he never cracked a smile. He was serious, serious, serious. So I could never read him. And so when he came up and he said, "Hearty congratulations, you guys," I was like,
this?
Okay. Yeah.
Heartiest congratulations, gang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heartiest congratulations, gang. Yeah, exactly. I knew I was like, all right, now we all laughed because we were just nervous that he was going to rip us. But to be perfectly honest, not a single person said anything negative towards me at all. And so, you know, some people
think that it was just like a lesser of three evils or whatever. But from my perspective and the things that were said at Final Tribal Council, the jury wanted to vote for me. And I would never say these things like, I feel like, you know, like I'm sort of bragging a lot and whatever, but you know, I do in a sense feel like a lot of that got cut out of the show in a way that I wasn't necessarily anticipating. And to everyone who was there at Final Tribal Council, it was obvious that I had won. And I know that there were still people that were watching the show that still weren't sure who was going to win going into the reading of the votes. So even at Final Tribal Council, I think they edited it in a way to make it look more even than it really was.
Okay, so when you are at the Final Tribal Council, did you know the whole time that you were going to bring up your mom at the Final Tribal Council, or was it something that got prompted because of the question that Jay had asked you?
I said in confessional that morning that I was not going to talk about my mom in Final Tribal Council. I wanted to sort of win in a way where it would be very obvious to everybody that I deserved to win based off the game that I played. You know, and, you know, this may sound overconfident or whatever, but I knew that I was most likely going to win Survivor the moment that Dave was voted out of the game. Just based on the reads that I had gotten from the jury throughout the game. And so I knew that it wasn't something that I needed to talk about in terms of, you know, getting votes or certainly not anything like that. But at the same time, there was a part of me that wanted to sort of close the loop on this incredible story, you know, like and bring my friends that I had played this game with in on what was really going on with me behind the scenes, like tell them my truth and show my mom, who, you know, who I imagined watching it, like, this is all for you. You know, not that she wouldn't have seen it up to that point anyway on the show, but, you know, the side of me that was like, I know what people are going to say that I just won, because it that weighed out more heavily. And I was like, I don't want to talk about it because I know what people are going to say. And I shouldn't be thinking like that, you know, it shouldn't really concern me, but you know, I wanted people to see my game for the game that it was and not conflate the two things that were happening. But you know, when Jay came up there, he sort of opened me up emotionally. And then Dave asked his question about what this meant. And it was the only answer I had, you know, I don't know how I could have answered that question honestly, without bringing up why I was really there. So I did not plan on getting into it, but you know, it happened. And yeah.
And so we all then know the story that you leave Survivor and, you know, you're racing back home. You get back to your home and you get to spend some time with your mom before she passes. Could you just describe briefly what that was like to, you know, make it home from Survivor and just like think about, there's so many, like, you could have missed a connection. I mean, that the fact that, you know, you were able to
I had to catch
there.
An earlier flight.
Yeah.
I raced to catch an earlier flight.
It blows my mind that this is a true story.
Yeah, no, me too. But I do think that even if I had gone on a later flight, I still would have seen her.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that timing was coincidental. You know, something that we haven't talked about is that after they stopped treatment, you know, my dad like broached the subject with my mom of like, you know, should we maybe bring him home? And she said, like, absolutely not. You know, I don't want to do that. And so the sort of compromise that they came up with, because it was like, and so I mentioned at the finale, like, she recorded videos. And so, like, I got to see, like, the strength that it was giving her. And what my brother said was true. Like, you can see it in the videos. As the time goes on, she's getting, like, more and more, like, animated and excited, just knowing that I'm, like, getting further in the game. But what they decided was that if I got voted out of the game, that they would bring me home. So if I would have gotten out at that rock, for example, I would not have been on the jury and I would have gone home. And so, you know, even though, you know, for every other family that has played the game, you don't get to know what's going on in the game. And for my mom, because she knew that I would come home if I were voted out, she basically got to play along.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knew that I had made it to the final four and then that I had made it to the final three. And she was walking around the block the day of Final Tribal Council. And it's honestly like when at the same time that the game was ending in Fiji was like when she started to slip a bit at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I believe that she just kept going to experience this full survivor experience.
You said that you didn't think that it was a coincidence that she was able to stay with you until the point that you got back home. And the biggest question that I just want to know from you, because I think it's the bigger question than anything we talk about with Survivor or any of these silly games, is has this changed your view of how our life works? Do you feel like was this all destiny in your mind? And has that changed the way that you view just the experience of living?
Oh, that's a big question. I don't know.
There's not a bigger question, but it's something I've really thought about a lot since coming away from this season.
Yeah, that's a big thing to make people think about.
Because you said at the finale, you said, yeah, I know this sounds crazy,
yeah,
but this is my life and this is what's happening to me. And
you couldn't write it more beautifully, right?
And just to share, you know, a little bit of my background is, and I know you know that I lost my dad a couple of years ago, but I had this moment with my dad right before he passed away where I felt like I had all these things that I wanted to say to him and he was perfectly fine and there was no indication that there was something wrong with him. But I just felt really compelled to have this amazing conversation with him, and I told him all of these things that I had been feeling, and he told me how much he loved me, and that was the last time that I ever spoke to him. And
wow.
And he had a heart attack and he just died, you know, suddenly. And I couldn't believe that, you know, that was that last conversation that I got to have with him. And I don't know what to make of that. And I'm just wondering if you've had any sort of change in the way that you look at everything.
Well, I mean, I've never been that spiritual of a person, mm-hmm. but there was something very, very strong connecting us when I was out there. And every time I had success or I didn't, she pushed me forward. And I genuinely believe that. And she was here like sending energy. And I think it was in those moments, like when I like felt her strength, but it wasn't just from what was going on at the time, but also what she had instilled in me for 25 years and my dad as well. The strength to overcome great obstacles, and the ability to stay positive, even in tough situations. It's something that she always did. And it's what kept me focused and motivated during the game. And I think allowed me to be successful. And then I also think it speaks to the power of that runs within each one of us. I mean, she absolutely was unwilling to go until I was right there with her and my dad was there and my brother was there and we were all there together. And we, you know, got to tell her how much we loved her. And, you know, my dad he didn't even realize that like she was about to like pass away, and he put on their song, like Tupelo Honey by Van Morrison. And like that, you know, that was the song that was playing when like she started to slip away.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's a coincidence. You know, like she, that was what she felt the most comfortable. Like, okay, I have my family here. This is my song. This is my husband of 35 years. Like, these are the people I care about the most. This is what I brought into the world and the goodness that I've delivered through these, you know, like other vehicles, these human people that I'm responsible for that are going to continue my legacy. And she knew that I was home and safe. And I told her that I won. And she like died immediately after I told her. Like, it was like seconds. It was crazy. It haunts me, you know, like that night, just thinking about that moment. And I just want more. Mm-hmm. But I know it was all worth it. I know that it was the right thing to do. And I know that I made, you know, her final days really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can ask for, I guess. So,
yeah, well,
setting the record for most tears ever shed on Rob Has a Podcast too. So there you go.
I mean,
breaking more records.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing all of this with us. I know it must be difficult to open up about these things, and they're very difficult things to talk about. So I know I really appreciate it. I'm sure that for the people that are listening, that they really appreciate everything that you shared as well. And your story really does speak to me. And I just feel like that sometimes I really think that everything is random and there's maybe that this is all there is. And then I hear a story like yours and it makes me feel like that it can't possibly be right. It's tragic, but I just have to say, I feel like, you know, your story is really beautiful also.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, thank you so much for sharing. And you know, I think that you're just a really tremendous person. And I feel like that I can't wait to see what you're going to do next with, you know, I think that the work that you do in your real life with, you know, with helping people is amazing. And you just seem like, you know, one of the most genuine people that I've seen come through Survivor. So, you know, as Zeke said, you know, heartiest congratulations again on your win.
Well, thank you. It means a lot. And honestly, it's still crazy for me that, first of all, I'm even on like Rob Has a Podcast as a former player, as a former winner. Like, you know, that alone, I wouldn't have believed you, let alone all of the other craziness that happened in 2016.
Yeah. All right. I know you got to get to you're going to a basketball game with Figgy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't know. People would be surprised by that, but hanging out with Figgy. So I'm very close friends with a lot of this cast. It's just a great group of people.
It does not surprise me. I know you have been raising so much money for charity. Let's give out that link again for the You Caring page. The video that you posted, of course, should be no surprise to anybody. Very inspiring on the You Caring page. That link is youcaring.com/Susie Klein. We will post the link to that in the show notes at youcaring.com/Susie Klein. Is there anything else you want to tell people to check out?
Well, I'll just give a little update in terms of fundraising. You know, we've raised over $50,000 on that You Caring page, and then also through the Stand Up to Cancer fundraiser on their page, and the money's all going to lung cancer research, to either Stand Up to Cancer or the Bonnie Addario Lung Cancer Foundation. In total, it's about $400,000.
It's amazing.
$360,000 from the Stand Up to Cancer, including the $100,000 from me and the $100,000 from Bristol Myers Squibb Company.
Yeah.
So there was $160,000 on the Stand Up to Cancer page from the finale.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
you know, fantastic work. And, you know, I'm sure your mom is tremendously proud. I'm sure, you know, your entire family is really, really proud. I got to, I saw your dad back in the fall at the Know-It-Alls and then on the red carpet. And he seems like a really sweet guy, too.
He definitely is. He's incredible. I'm very, very proud of him. And this whole experience has been exceptionally difficult for him the most. And we're just trying to keep each other positive.
Okay. So do you have a hashtag for us before we sign off today?
Oh, man. Can we do Live Like Susie?
You can.
All right, let's do it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, in the end, that's what this is all about, right?
What it's for, okay. Hashtag Live Like Susie, and of course, the now verified great Adam Klein is on Twitter.
You know that you can get verified too, Rob. It's not that hard.
That's what you say. I don't know if
have you tried?
That's true.
Have you tried?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And they say no. When's the last time you tried?
Yesterday. No. some time ago. That I filled out the form that they send it back with great efficiency.
All right. Do me a favor and do it one more time today, and in 5 days' time, you will be verified. And if I'm wrong, then I don't know. I'll buy you dinner or something.
Okay. At Adam Scott Klein on Twitter. Adam, thank you so much. And again, I'm sure that everybody, thank you for spending so much time with us today. I'm sure the listeners appreciate it.
Thank you. And hopefully you'll have me back on at some point.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you want. Okay.
All right.
Open invitation. All right. Have fun at the basketball game.
Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Adam Klein. What a great job he did getting into everything from his game. And more importantly, everything about his story with his mom. I can't thank him enough for sharing his experience with us here on the show, and I'll just leave it at that. So really looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about this podcast. Thanks so much for making it all the way through to the end of this one. I think it was a really great one. So thanks again, Adam, and all the best. Take care, everybody. Bye.